shape. They're more blunted rather than banana shaped.
Yeah, this looks just like the banana peppers, but it's a lot stronger. So I told him, no, not a jalapeno.
Yeah, maybe
Anaheim. It was about that long. Yeah, it's longer than most. Oh, it's on. But, you know, he knows it all.
Andy, is Mike at?
Walk through the door.
Okay.
What?
Need to go. Take a bite of this. It's sweet.
Sweet.
Yes. Literally just turned 9.
Good timing.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is the Wednesday, August 31st, 2016 meeting of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors. This is a work session. Just to remind folks of today's agenda, we have a number of things that we're going over in this room this morning. Andy, we're meeting with Public Health beginning at 2:30. Is that correct?
Yes. So you'll have, the plan is to get through through item number 4 this morning, possibly internal processes if there's time. The county attorney's coming in at 1:30 for item number 5. The site visit begins at 2:30 with Public Health, and then a joint meeting with Public Health in room 203 is at 4 o'clock.
Okay. So if for whatever reason we get done here with everything but number 5, before 11:30, we'll just take a break until 1:30. Okay. Everybody's got the agenda down then. Let's go ahead and go to our first item, which is potential expansion of use of Poor Farm property to promote local foods. And I think, Shanti, you're on the hot seat for this, correct? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I think the side of the property we didn't
put I can pull it up. And
good morning.
Restart my computer.
Hi.
Hi, Shanti.
So yeah, we're here today to discuss the additional acreage that we took out of production this spring and put into cover crop. And Andy's going to pull up the map just so we can revisit the area. But if you guys all remember, it's the 3.5 acres adjacent to the Grow Johnson County land. So it's a total of almost 6 acres that will be in food production hopefully by next year. And so is it in your packet? I drafted an RFP for the additional acreage, and so this is just to start the discussion if we are ready to release an RFP to include another community group onto the Poor Farm site for next year.
I literally just found this RFP. It is in the packet. But is it pretty much based on the last time we did an RFP?
Yeah, I really I took what you guys released last year and adapted it to the current time. So it's not that different, but it's a draft. It's definitely up for interpretation. So so basically, it would be the same releasing to either an individual or community group. That's how I think you guys had it last year, so that we didn't really limit who could apply. My thought is that we could reopen it for about a month and look at different organizations by the end of September.
Do you have any concerns? I know that for people who are in local food production, this is a really busy time. I mean, do we have any concerns about their ability to respond to an RFP just because of where we're at in the growing season? Is it helpful to push it back a little, or is it just not much different?
I do think because it is a busy time, but for anyone who is anticipating growing in a new site next year, the sooner they know where their land's going to be, the better. And I think that for someone who would be interested in this property, they would be able to find the time to make the RFP. And then if anyone wants to plant garlic, that needs to get in about a month and a half. So I think that would the time frame will work.
Okay. Do you have inquiries, more than one group inquiring? Or?
Currently, there's one community group who's expressed a lot of interest. It's the Sudanese community group. Is interested in accessing some land at the Poor Farm and working potentially with other groups to do some technical assistance and more of a community garden style project. And they're the only group that's approached me directly, but I do believe if we open this RFP up, it would we would have interest from other parties as well.
Now, we on the previous RFP where we began working with Grow, we had some restrictions in terms of pesticides and whatnot, and I'm assuming we've got the exact same rules for this property.
Yeah, as we're approaching it now, and we can talk about that, all food production on the Poor Farm site is meant to be no spray, I mean organic practices, and any I mean, I know GRO adheres to that in any...
Organic practices, but not necessarily certification.
No, not certification. We're not at that level yet. But yeah, that's pretty... That is going to be one of the stipulations. And I mean, especially GRO's growing their food without any chemicals. We wouldn't allow any chemical inputs as part of that, yeah.
Now, with the 3 acres, are you thinking, or is it going to only be one group or one entity using that 3 acres, or could it be that you would accept two and let one do 1.5 and another 1.5? Or,
I mean, I think that's something we can discuss today. My thought is to not really go beyond one other entity, just since we're working on the master plan and we don't really have the full vision for the farm yet. I would be cautious to include too many new organizations or groups, but I do think there is room for one more organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in preliminary conversations, and I don't want to grow us here, and they can speak for themselves, but we have talked a little about some collaboration with a group that's out there. I mean, the type of community work that GRO does, they've expressed interest in supporting another entity on site. But I think if we get too big at this point, we might be overwhelming ourselves a little bit.
Oh, okay.
As far as, yeah, I mean, but that's something we can talk about. That's just my thought.
I had no opinions on it one way or the other. I was just wondering if you intended it to be as a chunk.
Well, and the other, something else that I'd like to discuss today, since it is a 3.5 acre plot, and GRO has, you know, been on site and they're doing really well on their 2 acres, and if there is an interest in expanding onto another acre, I mean, we can kind of look at the whole piece as one large food production site and kind of see how we want to break it up. If we want to offer the full 3.5 acres to another entity, or if we want to have some land that's maybe shared or that GRO could take on a little more, and it was a 2 acre parcel that we offered in an RFP.
I presume that if we're going to do this through RFP, we would need to have GRO, if they wanted to, let's say they just said we'd like to add 1 acre. I think they'd have to do the RFP.
Okay.
I mean, that's how we
Absolutely.
Dispose of public, or not dispose of, but that's how we that's how we allow access to public land. So I think anybody who wanted any part of that would have to do an RFP.
I think
we should probably make the RFP worded in such a way that folks know that they wouldn't have to apply to have the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem, you know, it's expanding. But I think there's some details that really need to be worked out on such a plan. I think, you know, we've got some that are already providing area for them to grow and they're growing crops. Then you run into the issue of who's paying how much or who's paying what for water, mm-hmm. for irrigation and those bills. Who's sharing the spigots at certain times? Do we have to do something different to expand that for hydrants somewhere? I think there's some issues we need to work out if we're going to go much further.
Absolutely, and that's, I think, one. I mean, you know, we're kind of testing the water, so to speak, on how this farm could in the future be a larger scale community farm, and that's why I think trying to get too many entities on there right now is a little, it's too much, but if we can start working and seeing how it works to have maybe two separate entities on site who are sharing water. There's metering systems you can use to really meter what level of water you're using, you know, so one entity would turn it on and off based on the water they're using, and then the next entity would do the same. And so with two groups, I think we could start working on some of that. And anything
we take a couple of different meters, but
yeah.
If you're already not paying for sanitary or for sewer system with it, it's just for irrigation.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference in what you pay, and I don't know how you separate that, unless you add a meter of some sort.
Do we have sewage charges on the poor farm right now? I mean, I know the restroom just got
I think
put
that
in
was
place.
The intent. I don't know if that's done or not. There was intended not to for, they could split the meter for the irrigation. They could have a separate meter for that. Then you have the meter for the sewage.
We will only have sewage when that we're hooked up, which I assume is soon.
They were working on it yesterday.
Yes,
but that won't be billed to, that will be the county's bill.
Okay.
And then to my understanding, it's a split water meter to the bathrooms versus the farm.
Okay.
And your question or your comment is there's a way to meter hoses or something separately.
For individual
right?
use, like, yeah.
And that, but so the way this is written, which we just need to make sure we all understand. There are 3 acres of tillable land available. The board is open to negotiating the acreage to be used, time period of the project, and any other specific provisions of the project. Okay? Temporary use of one or more of the buildings located on the property may be negotiable. Well, GRO is using what we have available, so I don't know how negotiable that is. But
yeah.
But it goes on in the next paragraph after that to say eligible applicants include any individuals, organizations, businesses, nonprofits interested in promoting local foods. By the way this is written, a for-profit business can come in here and put in a proposal for the land, which if the board is okay with that.
That was my question. I was just getting to
but,
that. Yeah.
But it seems like to me we're not quite ready for that because I'm completely supportive of idling more ground. I don't think we have to have the long-range farm plan to know that certain ground is just best for this. But if we're going to start leasing it out to for-profit businesses or individuals or restaurants or whatever, they're going to be treated differently than the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we're ready for that. I mean, we may be.
I think our last one, we actually had a last-second response from a person who would have done it for profit. It was just an individual. And it wasn't precluded in the last one.
I mean, I clearly think we need to be there soon. Mm-hmm. Because the row cropping in certain areas, he's having turnaround problems, and it makes sense to me that we move to for-profit, but they're going to pay differently. It's all going to be structured differently. I mean, we're not giving them the land in all likelihood then. And so I don't know if we're ready for it or not, and maybe we just see what's out there, and that will help us determine if we're going to idle more land in the farm contract. Because applications here are due September 16th, so before we have to notify our current farmer of termination of the contract and renegotiate the acreage, we would know the applicants here. So if we saw a market and we decided we wanted to idle 10 more acres, we would know the market. So maybe this is fine, but the compatibility with GROW right now, and if they legitimately are going to apply for one more acre, and they can speak for themselves, two more acres, if that's a for-profit, it's a much different deal than
if it's a different level of collaboration.
It's the crisis center. I mean, Habitat or what, not Habitat, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that's something that that's exactly what I wanted to discuss in this meeting, because that language is consistent with what the previous RFP had, and so I mean, it's really up to us today to decide if we want to just open it to nonprofits or, as you said, Janelle, I mean, open it up to everyone and get a sense of what the demand is and how we want to respond to the demand. I guess if we're going to prefer nonprofits, we might need to put that in the RFP so people are aware that would be.
And if we're not ready to rent to a farmer yet, which I don't know if we are or not, but if we're not ready, I don't want to lead them on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? If Shante sells the farmer, needs land and needs 3 acres, and this would be five-year contract, and we would negotiate it kind of like we do our farm contract, right, which is different than $1. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lead that farmer on if we're not ready yet. And I don't know if we're ready yet or not. I mean, I really don't know.
What do you think it would take for us to be ready?
A plan. Well, hired a consultant to create a plan. Yeah.
Again, I don't know that you have to know where. I mean, when we've looked at the map, to me, it becomes somewhat obvious of land that's more available for food production than others. Now, eventually, a lot of this could be ready for food production, but I don't know if we have to have the plan on a shelf to know that these 10 acres could be available for food production. I mean, I've always thought we could just think that through, but we put cover crop on this because we believe you need a year of cover crop before you can grow. So we only have 3 acres to deal with. If a local farmer wanted all 3 acres, are we ready to do that? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, what? we could just put preference given to nonprofit groups.
It does also point out that financial arrangements are dependent on the type of proposal submitted, you know, so hopefully that would be kind of a heads up that.
Right.
if somebody was making money off of it, they'd have a different requirement. And Janelle's comment reminded me, we have received a notification of termination from the current farmer regarding the lease, so we will be renegotiating that lease. The farm manager was ready to come in to talk to you about terminating, and
it's just like last year, but that's standard operating procedure for them, right?
Well, plus prices have changed, so he's, I mean, I don't blame him at all, but so it dawns on me there may be a way to write it to indicate we're also looking at a long-term need. Mm-hmm. So we're interested in proposals for just this 3 acres, and we're interested in what people have in mind for a longer term. And there may be a way to kind of measure the demand.
Although that's where, you know, back to my original comment about I don't want to see people who are so busy right now have to go through the a process just to, I mean, knowing that there really isn't a chance of them getting
that
the land,
I agree with that.
You know, it seems like a waste of their time.
And it's with the September 16th deadline, that's a pretty quick turnaround for an exercise in futility.
That date can be changed. Yes. That was just kind of a placeholder based on when we got on the agenda. So I think we need to I would like to open it for a solid 4 weeks.
Here's a question. The demand for community gardens is great. The lines, people started lining up before 6 a.m. to get the community garden spots because there's not enough of them. And they go in, they hand out numbers, and they're sold out as fast as they can sell them when they're put up. What if the city of Iowa City applied for this and wanted to put 2 acres or 3 acres into community gardens? Would we accept a proposal like that?
If we're not managing it?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying.
If we're not managing it, I'm open to a lot.
It could be crazy out there.
Yeah, I suppose it could be. Yeah. I would be open to a governmental application.
Yeah, that's,
So, because that's what I'm thinking. I mean, my vision, too, is whomever applies, we need an organization or an entity that has the same level of autonomy that GROW has, that has, you know, at the point that we're at without having a lot of infrastructure or support on site, if we need an entity that is ready to execute their own vision without a lot of county support other than the land.
An application that needs us to do a lot of stuff would not be looked on as favorably as an application that could do
their
own.
At this point,
Parks and Recs manages the garden plots, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So if Iowa City Parks and Recs applied, I would clearly entertain that because we're not responsible for anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I would with stipulations because I think there has to be a certain amount of care, you know, protected for each other with weeds and so forth like that. I think there's always some that let them go and others take care of them.
Well, they have regulations, and they often, if you abandon your plot, they
pull it out
and plow it under, and they have
get
those.
Available.
Yeah,
The city has demonstrated they maintain the plots pretty well.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Weatherby gets a little neglected sometimes, but the others are doing really.
You know,
well.
I live across the street from the Chattuck Green Park, and I watch them every day over there.
So I have an idea. This may be harebrained, but let me try. We go forward with this proposal basically the way it's written, and I think it's all clarified. But somewhere in here we say, in the early winter, the board will be putting out a questionnaire to measure future demands you know, something that is not a RFP, but it's saying Joe Blow Farmer is really interested in 2 or 3 acres. I mean, because I think we need to understand that as we go through this planning process. Mm-hmm. And I mean, kind of legitimate requests before we finish our farm contract. I mean, so the timing kind of matters because we have to finish our farm contract. Usually do it in December, right?
Yeah, December, January. I think it has to be in place by March 1st.
So it seems like to me if we wanted to idle more land next year, we kind of need to know that in the early part of the winter, like November, December.
You know, I would like to get, we just chose a consultant for the plan. It was HBK, correct? I would really, and I see a couple of the folks in the audience today, I'd really like to get their input and as we start this process before we get the cart in front of the horse, so to speak. I would really like to start that planning process. This, you know, if we idled some more land, maybe it's not the place that we should have idled the land. I'd like to start doing that planning process and find out where the best place to put the next idle land would be. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why we're not the experts. And I think through engaging with our, through the planning process and engaging the other stakeholders, that maybe we can find the next land idle. And
but
so,
are you really willing to wait 2-3 more years until more food is grown at the farm?
No.
Okay.
But I can see your idea, Janelle, being part of the planning process as some of these stakeholder meetings and meetings of potential interested entrepreneurial farmers or beginning farmers and getting that sense through a survey or through even just a meeting, get a sense of what the demand is.
I
think that would be like, potentially the land would be available in 2018. I mean, we're at the point right now where we're looking at someone for 2017, but most farmers who are looking, especially doing it for profit, wouldn't be able to have that. We wouldn't be able to put out an RFP in January and get someone on the land very likely.
But before we sign our farm contract,
we need to know.
We need to know if we were going to cover crop more land.
Yeah, and that's what we did last year.
The timing of it is dependent on the farm contract. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're in 19.
But we could do a similar process we did this year without knowing exactly who is going to be on that additional 3.5 acres. If we determine that there's demand and decide to carve out another portion of land, we can take that out of the farm contract and cover crop it and potentially and do the same process and start prepping the land for potential users in the future.
But I think if you're putting something out, you know, there's always the potential of expanding it. You know, you can always say that there's that potential. However, I think we need to limit it to that 3 acres that we've been talking about until we get the plan in place.
So as I understand it, do you all feel that it makes sense to put this RFP out specifically to governmental and nonprofit organizations for this particular RFP and then start doing some more investigative work as to what the level of interest is from independent and for-profit farmers?
Yeah,
I think that's, so. Otherwise, it's just an exercise.
And that process, doing that process in cooperation with HBK, I mean, I think that's part of why we hired them. So
we just changed this sentence here to be eligible applicants include nonprofits and governmental entities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then time frame, Shanti, you said a whole 30 days, right?
That to me seemed, if we release it, I don't know when the best, we could release it tomorrow, 1st of September. I don't know what the turnaround time is. Andy and I could work on that. But yeah, I give it about 30 days.
Okay.
And then we could, get into early October, start looking at proposals and choose an applicant.
I like 30 days.
And it is a very, based on the first one that we did, which was, we're calling it a request for proposals. It's essentially a press release. I mean, it's got some terms, and it is a very flexible, there's not a specific format that they have to, because you want to be open to kind of whatever people are interested in doing, so.
But we've
always
worked
very
in the
flexible
past.
Too.
You guys like that format to have it be open. We don't need to put too many more.
Yeah, essentially people just gave us kind of written narrative of what they were going to do, and that was fine.
To get to Rod's original, I don't know how long ago, about spraying, should this just say that?
Yeah, I think we need to put all production will be done I'll make sure that's included.
I don't know what the language is, but it doesn't have to be certified organic, but no spray, right?
Yeah.
Because we don't want it to interfere with grows crops.
And we haven't actually, as part of the master planning process, we haven't actually declared that all production will be sustainable, but that is where we're from what I've heard from you all and just where we're heading and the practices that grow are using, that's what we're looking toward. So I think we can set that precedent now. It's really important. So.
Okay. What else do you need from the board today then?
This is great. And I will redraft the proposal and work with Andy to get it out hopefully by maybe Monday like September 5th through the October 5th, something like that.
I don't think we actually need board action, do we, Andy?
As long as everybody's
shaking heads here.
Can release it tomorrow. I'll just change two sentences.
Okay. Yes.
I had one other thing. Uh-huh. When I was reading the contract on the original one, they're required to have a certain amount of insurance for liability and so forth. I think that would have to extend to this as well. And then I guess the other question would be, do you personally check that, or who keeps up to make sure it's in place?
Would that be
the liability insurance for the?
Would that be the county attorney?
On the
how is it working with Grow right now? I actually don't know.
I don't know.
Didn't they submit it with their lease?
I'd have to look back and see. So.
Yeah.
Are there any other? That's thank you. That's a really good point. I'll make sure to put that in the RFP. Are there any other specific? I mean, I was going to, any other specific stipulations? I mean, it says in here what the county has to offer, which is land and access to water, and that's it. And I will remove, I think you're right, remove at the building piece, because right now any building that is available is already occupied. So I don't, we're not prepared to negotiate any other buildings, I'm assuming.
I don't know what it would be. Is there anything in there about parking or restrooms, or is any of that addressed in there at all?
Not in this RFP.
I mean, we could certainly talk to anybody who applies about what our expectations are there.
So this is just me. I don't think in this press release you have to have every detail of the contract.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
What you can do is the public document is show the contract we have with Grow. So as you put it up on our website, people can look at that contract and know what's going to be expected of them. But if you start listing everything that's in the contract, you're going to end up with a 4-page press release.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it had to be in there just when we do a contract. It needs to include.
Back to the buildings, access to the buildings. I know Grow is using the that lean-to on the south side. Are they using the entire building, and is there a possibility they could share that? Tighten it up a little bit if they're sprawled in there or something. And we've got some folks from Grow here.
What I've witnessed is that it's pretty full.
Okay.
And I don't want to speak for you guys, but but there is always potential for, I would see the sharing, and this is my vision, have no expectations, would be more of a collaborative. If there was an entity out there that was in more of a collaborative role with Grow Johnson County,
right.
I could see there being shared space and that being negotiated, but I would be hesitant to carve out any of that space, because it's already a really limited space.
Yeah, yes. They would have to work that out.
Officially carve it out. And that's one of the things when Andy and I first started talking about this RFP, that is, two separate entities. If they're completely separate, it is still a small shared area, and we want to make sure that there's no concern about equipment use or, just some of, we assume respect, but we would need to probably make sure that everyone's on board with the level of collaboration that could be happening. But that's, I believe, could be negotiated as we move forward.
Right.
The only thing that, whatever that thing is called, that's just the wall on the side, Secondary Road still doesn't have all their stuff out of it.
Those shingles are still in there, right?
Yeah,
that's all that's in there is the shingles.
I went by the other day and I thought there were signs and.
You're talking about the other building.
Yeah, the other one. Well, so could someone else use that? I think it's a question mark. I wouldn't want to rule it out because if that made them able to farm here, but we may need it for whoever we're hiring to do the construction stuff. So
we need to remind Secondary Roads. We'd ask them to get it.
It's not all out. I mean, I it was last week.
I think we told them they could leave some stuff in there until we needed it.
Yeah. So that building potentially is available, but it'd be a potential, not a promise.
So do we want to leave the buildings being negotiable in there with the idea that there could be nothing, but there potentially could
what
be?
I would probably reword it so it doesn't sound like a real building. Temporary use of a, what do you call that, a lean-to? It's not a lean-to.
Shelter.
I could say structure.
Covered.
Lean-to. It's lean-to, no. I think.
A lean-to.
Basically, it's a machine shed.
Yeah.
A machine shed with no walls.
Three-sided.
Yeah. A three-side lean-to may be negotiable. because that's the only building I think we would consider.
Mm-hmm. A covered structure.
Yeah, actually, that's one of more of the covered structures. Yeah, I like that.
I thought
Greg, that was supposed to all be gone.
I thought we'd ask Greg to get his stuff out
of
there.
We did have a lean-to, but then we told them they could leave it in that one building
I don't remember telling them they could leave it.
We had a discussion.
Well, I thought we wanted them to get everything out so that
we'll,
we can.
I'll have a conversation with Greg.
Yeah.
It's time for them to vacate that side of the road.
Yeah, they've got enough room on the other side.
Okay.
With potential.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll keep that in. Covered structure.
Just reword it.
Okay.
Need anything else then, Shanti, from us?
I don't believe so. Thank you all for your support of this, and I'll look forward to bringing some proposals to you in about a month.
We look forward to it, too. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Is Shante number three, too, or not?
I'm just part of the conversation.
Okay. She's hanging around for the whole thing, I think.
Number three is just in case there was anything.
Anything else.
Otherwise covered.
Okay, item number two on our agenda is an update on Grow Johnson County, including but not limited to the assignment of the lease for the Poor Farm property in agreement for use of the portion of the property. So, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
John's in the middle, so he must be the main spokesperson. Could you guys
describe in the PowerPoint, but
introduce yourselves for the auditor's office, please?
Yeah, you bet. I'm John Bowler, one of the organizers of Grow Johnson County.
Jason Grimm, I'm the production manager for Grow Johnson County.
Bob Andler from Table to Table and a partner in the project.
And I'm not sure how much time we have, but I can, you know, I think our plan was to give you an update on what we've been up to this summer. We've got some photos, so I could surely show you photos all day, but I probably won't. But, you know, I want to start again by thanking you for your support and your enthusiasm. I think this first season has been off to a really good start. And, you know, we've dealt with some challenges, which we'll talk about. But overall, I think we've all been really pleased with the output and also the engagement that's been taking place at the farm, too. So we spent some time. So we have a current board of directors of just Bob Anderlich and Jeff Wilming, who's with Quality Care, and we're adding a few others as we go. But myself, Jason Grimm, Scott Koepke, and also behind me today we have Michelle Birkin and Darcy Nelson and Devin Leslie back there. Darcy and Michelle are AmeriCorps members who are working with Iowa Valley RC&D and also GROW until I think the end of October. And Devin is an MSW student at the university who's doing her advanced practicum with GROW Johnson County this year. So we met, I think that was last week, to do some strategy planning, kind of evaluating how things went this year and sort of looking to the future, revisiting our mission and just making sure we're all on the same page. And do some dreaming and that sort of thing. But, you know, just want to revisit our kind of primary mission, which hasn't changed. We just, you know, kind of shortened some of the language a little bit. But our goal is still to combat food insecurity and promote health. And we're doing that, as you know, through two different processes. One, to grow food in an organic method, and that food has been donated to local hunger relief agencies. And we've been spending a lot of time with education. We feel that that's a huge part of what we're doing. And as we kind of look to the future, I think that's going to take an even stronger priority with what we're doing. But our goal is to empower a new wave of growers in all ages, and it's been really successful this summer. So, and there's a good photo of Scott, as he calls indoctrinating the little ones. So, yeah, our food plan for year one, I'll let Jason talk about a little bit here. I think we kept a pretty similar implementation of what we planned there. We had this graphic that we showed. We had a few extra veggies pop up as we went. Jason and Scott have built some wonderful relationships with local growers, and they would, you know, hand over some, you know, huge flats of seed starts and just different things that we said yes to. Of course, we'll plant that. So things like cauliflower, onions, cucumbers, all sorts of things. So
get them for free, you'll plant them, right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Tyson's was going to dump out all of their small onion sets, so we got like four bushel bags of onions. We didn't turn them down.
No.
Yeah, and I, you know, again, just major props to Jason and Scott. They've been out there every day. Volunteers like Michelle and Darcy.
So far you're at 6,200 pounds. That's impressive.
Yeah, we're really, really.
Especially because the year's not over.
Right.
Yeah, I'm confident we'll hit 10,000 pounds.
Wow.
We still got a lot of potatoes out there.
That's great. That's more than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely been kicking up the past few weeks, and
it's over 3 tons.
So the more hands,
that's over 3 tons of food.
Okay, that's good math.
Last Friday was our biggest harvest of 970 pounds in one day. So.
And Bob, go ahead.
Oh, so Bob told me he's hauling this stuff in his pickup because they don't want it in the table-to-table van.
What happened early on is we had a load of the early load of potatoes had a little bit of mud on them. So we've just decided to use my truck because it's way easier to hose out than the vans are. And it's a labor of love for me. I really enjoy going out there and picking that up and distributing it. But, yeah, I have been using my own truck.
Yeah, and so between Bob and some of our volunteers who have connections with some of the agencies, when we harvest, we either call table to table or directly take it to the Crisis Center, North Liberty. I don't know, some of the other organizations
it also went to pantries such as the Icy Compassion Pantry off of First Avenue and Wade Street up in there. And then some of it's gone to HACAP, Head Start, some of it's gone to Shelter House, some of it's gone to DVIP. It just depends on the timing, what's there, what can be used. And so that's the whole nature of what Table Table does anyway, is trying to match up the type of product with what the agencies can use and what they can handle.
And recently, you were able to take some to the new University of Iowa pantry on campus that the students started too.
So. Yeah.
And as you might have seen, Field of Family, we supported them with, I think, 600-some pounds of food the other week when they did their farm stand at the mobile home park. I forget the name of it, but I think I included a couple photos of that, but that was a great partnership. So as I mentioned, education has been a huge part of what we've been doing. This is actually a pretty conservative number, but there's been at least 116 people of all ages they've been able to participate in really meaningful ways, hands-on. Whether they knew it or not, they were learning things that they can take with them, some of which were there specifically to learn. And so, as you might have seen too, Scott spent the summer 8 weeks with the Youth Empowered to Serve program, which is a great program that Latasha has been coordinating. And we were thrilled to have, I think, 3 to 4 kids who had come, high school students. They came every week, and Scott worked closely with them for a 4-hour period, and they did a lot of vital work in the farm plots. But Scott incorporated his curriculum, which entails so much wonderful things beyond gardening and food production into just simple life skills. And I wish he was here to be able to tell some of the stories, but I know he saw a lot of positive interactions that sort of came into fruition as the weeks went on. Most high school students are pretty shy and ambivalent about working with this crazy bearded guy, and not too sure about gardening, but as the weeks went on, they became a lot more comfortable and really excited about the work they were doing. And I think what Scott's vision is for next year is to do that again, but also utilize some of these students who now have pretty good experience and incorporate them as peer mentors, leaders who can teach their classmates.
There's generation after generation of Iowans who, whether it's true or not, certainly claim to have picked up a work ethic by doing farm work. And there's no reason to stop that now. I mean, we have opportunities, so I'm really glad that they made that connection with you guys.
Yeah, and I know Jason's been, he's had a few demonstrations out there, right?
Yeah, most of our demonstrations that I've been able to coordinate that are more like towards the for-profit farmers is a partnership with ICASH and the University of Iowa's College of Public Health for their ag medicine students. So I brought out a group of students in April, late April, and then a group of students also in June. And the ones in June were actually students that were here for their week-long ag medicine class, so people from all over the country. And they came out there and actually demonstrated real equipment to talk about farm safety and some actual operation and hearing things. So it was actually a kind of a tour site for those classes too.
And this is a photo of Scott talking with some med students during their orientation, and there's a couple different groups that came out from University of Iowa School of Medicine, just an array of community groups, whether businesses. We had some Masters of Public Health students come out.
High school, City High students.
Yeah, and we have some photos too, and that'll jog our memory. But it's been really neat to see just large groups, some with some prior skills, some without, and then they leave with just an excitement about wanting to participate in our work, but also just work back home wherever they live, and feeling empowered to grow, and especially with those people in the public health or medical field, they have a sort of renewed sense of the importance of diet, and access to healthy food is a huge part of keeping our community healthy. And so that's been great. I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I've seen a really good variety of groups come out and participate in the work.
So that's education. Is that the same number of people that actually have put their hands in the dirt
Yeah, that's counting everybody.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's groups who've come out that we've not really counted either, so it might be closer to 150 total people.
Right. But 116 folks have probably put their hands in the dirt and helped pick or plant. Or
They've left with dirt under their fingernails.
Yep.
And here's just some photos, kind of beginning on the season, planting potatoes. That was the University of Iowa men's swimming team up there putting together tomato cages for us. Frontier Natural Foods Co-op, as you know, they supplied a very generous grant for us, but they also contributed some vital labor. If you can see the guy in the gray shirt, that's their CEO. He was probably their hardest worker, and we welcome him back anytime. Tony Bedard, I think, is his last name. They were great. There's the high school students putting some mulch down for us. We had another group. These were in the left-hand corner. These were some young men who work for a company in Iowa City, and they spent a Friday morning with us, and they are all from West Africa, and so they remarked that, you know, it had been a while since they've been able to participate in farm work, but they have a lot of experience, really loved it. And I told Shanti this too, that they've, you know, inquired about, you know, they would love to, you know, have a plot or something to be able to grow some of the foods that they're used to. And it was great to have them out there. They were really energetic. And yeah, we had, let's see, there's Jason washing off some onions. Bottom left-hand corner, there's a couple of the youth from the YES program. And we were lucky to have ISU Extension come out one day, and they led a salsa-making class with the produce that we grew, and that was with the YES kids. So we harvested tomatoes, peppers, onions, and they threw some melons in there, which was really good.
Oh, yeah.
But they just, you know, demonstrated a really simple way to put the ingredients in a ball jar, shake it up, and it was really fun to see the kids really enjoy it and eat the heck out of it really quickly. So there's, you know, photos of Scott doing his thing. Bottom right-hand corner, those are med students. And I will say Scott has been out there really every day, as has Jason, and there's incredible resources we have. This is the Masters of Public Health class that came in just a couple weeks ago, and props again to Darcy and Michelle, our AmeriCorps members, who coordinated all of the harvesting that happened that day. And it was a big group, but we got a lot done. That was the day that we harvested for Field of Families farm stand, so that was great. This is just a few photos of some of the harvests that we've had. There's Bob and Scott just this past Friday.
Yep.
Those are peppers that came from the Oakdale facility where Scott has been spending a lot of time. Do you remember what the poundage was for?
It was 300 pounds of hot peppers and one box, hot peppers and one box of sweet peppers. But one thing I want to say is when you deliver these items to the agencies, there's an energy because they see what's coming and they get so excited because most of the stuff I'm delivering has been picked that morning.
Yeah.
So, and it goes fast. And what feedback I'm getting is especially the hot peppers are really, you know, flying off the shelves first. But the cucumbers and tomatoes and things like that, everything's going really well for all those agencies. And it's something that people snag first before anything else.
Yeah, I can definitely verify that the hot peppers are the most popular.
You guys
popular.
Raise any dill out there? You can't buy it at the farmer's market.
You're not here to shop.
Asking.
We don't have any planted yet.
Can you farmers take note of that? So the market for dill?
Good to know.
Mickey's writing that down.
Wild in my yard. Yeah.
Just toss down some seeds. You'll have dill out your ears.
At this point, we're planning probably early October to construct a hoop house, and Jason can talk a little more about what that will look like.
Okay, now I'm excited.
Okay.
Why?
Well, you know, it's I've been at the food pantries when fresh vegetables there, and I've watched enthusiasm, and I'm like, we need to be able to provide something year-round.
Okay.
And so when you go to a early farmer's market and the hydroponic tomatoes are there, at least they're tomatoes that are somewhat local, right? But people are like starving for something that didn't come from Mexico.
Sure.
And so I was hoping we would get to this conversation.
Yeah, so right now I'm in the process of putting together budgets for different types of designs and models, like a movable one that where you can start stuff a little bit earlier in one spot, move it ahead to start your tomatoes a little bit earlier. Or just a stationary version. They all have different costs, and it's not like it's there's no wind out there, so I'm a little hesitant about a temporary one that's anchored down, you know, when it's not being moved, but versus a permanent one that's just, you know, posts are pounding into the ground and stuff.
Because so. Our lease, I just found that, says only with express written permission of the landlord. So you're going to have to, like, come up with a plan for us to give you the express written permission.
Okay. Yeah, it's nothing that would be, like, anchored with any concrete or anything. It's yeah. But, yeah.
I think we had some rules, didn't we, on this anchoring when we were talking about the hoop buildings down by Kelowna?
I was also wondering whether we would have to talk with the city because being within city limits too. Yeah. So. That's why it's taking a little bit longer.
Which, I think we have to have a conversation because my guess is the city's going to be, this isn't a negative, but problematic on this because when we had to change our ordinance to allow hoop buildings to go through without a building permit and so of certain size. And so we changed our ordinance. The city doesn't have that. And so, you know, when we did our research and we, three of us went with the other two to our Amish neighbors' farms to look at how they constructed them, you can't get a building permit on some of these hoop buildings. And so we may have a problem getting Iowa City ready for this.
The good thing is, you know, I think all the conversations I've had with anybody at the city to this point is they're supportive of what you guys are doing and maybe even excited. And so if you know you want to do this in October, we should probably start talking to them now. And I think if you want to enlist somebody from the county to go with you to speak to the city, we'd be happy to do that because we all want to see this happen. So.
I do remember a few years back, one of our local farmers that now farms up by Manchester had hoop buildings in his backyard. The city had some serious issues with that. Neighbors weren't extremely happy either, but he was living in a residential area. This is a farm, so the conversation should be had with the city. But
our own ordinance, I mean, PDS, other than Josh is back there, I guess. I mean, we had to create an amendment to our ordinance to allow this to happen, and so it wasn't without some timing. However, Iowa City permits hoop buildings in every single grocery store and True Value
yes.
that are there for 6 or 7 months. Mm-hmm. So they clearly allow them somehow, but I wouldn't assume we can get this done in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. As long as we get it done before the ground is frozen, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those anchored down.
Start sooner rather than later and let us know how we can help.
I assume our zoning at the poor farm is ag, right?
Yeah. Yeah, city still has some ag ground. You know?
Yeah, within the city limits, yeah. Right?
Yeah, but we agree it's
Josh
some exciting stuff.
Josh is shaking his head back there.
Are you shaking your head? It's not ag?
No.
Oh, he's talking about something else. You can grab a microphone if you want.
Josh Broussard, Director of PDS. I was just talking with Sean T, trying to remember if it was zoned public or if it's some other zoning district since it's owned by a governmental entity. If it's zoned public, then we have much more leeway with what we do. I'm not sure what it would deal with the permitting requirements, but it's just the public zoning district was created to allow governmental entities a little bit more freedom to go about and accomplish the things that governments need to do, not be above any regulations by any means.
So, Jason, Shante and Josh will help you through this. As far as I'm concerned, express written permission is not going to be difficult. We just need to make sure we've jumped through the right hoops, pun intended, and where you want this. I mean, but and then can you explain to me how this will increase your growing?
Yeah, it would be something that we'd be growing in ground. It wouldn't be used for starting plants or anything in the spring. I'm already starting to develop relationships with growers that are willing to donate greenhouse space on their farms if we provide seeds and some supplies. One farmer just called me this morning and said, I have a small greenhouse I'm not using. You guys could use the whole thing if you want. Nice. We'd be able to do about 9,000 plants if we
That's
want.
That's great.
Because otherwise we'd have to have electricity out to this for heat, and there's just a lot of other things that makes it almost more permanent. So in this case, it would just be for like growing in the ground.
So how will it extend the season if it's not a heated hoop building?
Just the thermal mass of, on a day when it's 50 degrees and sunny, it'll be 80, 90 degrees inside, just the amount of heat from the sun.
So will you be able to grow everything but 3 months out of the year, or how will that work?
December, January will be the toughest, and it's not because of temperature, it's because of the number of hours in the day that we have enough sun. Uh-huh. So some things will be growing in the ground, maybe, like we could have spinach in there and carrots could be in there in January and February. They're just not going to grow. They're going to be they're not going to die. They're just going to be kind of in a
dormant
stage, yeah. And then in February, when the days start getting longer, you'll start seeing a lot more growth then happen. So,
Shanti Sells, PDS. I just have a question. Where are you guys thinking of putting this? Is it on the 2 acres you're currently on, or where is
that? Yeah, on the 2 acres. Haven't decided the exact site right now. Trying to figure out best drainage, and because water comes off of it, so I don't want it to pond right next to another area. That makes a bigger issue, so. So yeah, leading into one of our biggest challenges this year was this morning on the news, they were talking about how much rain we've had in the month of August. It's been over 7 inches for like the Iowa City area. Yeah. And this is a sign that, so the site out there has a 1-2% slope. 2% is almost what's recommended to actually have positive drainage on a site. So there's a couple pockets where there's just low spots that don't naturally drain anywhere. So the only drainage that does happen is soaking into the ground. So the pictures on the left, on the far left is our tomato cucumber area. So we lost probably between 30 to 50 tomato plants in that section just from drowning after we got planted. So in our cropping plans for next year, we're determining whether that will be an area that would actually be planted versus an area that would maybe sow some natural flora to have there for beneficials. It was a great attraction for frogs. I found a couple snakes underneath the row cover there, all things that are great to have in the garden as pest control. The picture in the middle is our potato fields. As you guys remember, all of our fields were oriented east to west. Well, all the rows then go across the natural drainage, which is great if you had a good slope. But when you have very little drainage, all your water then ponds between your hills of potatoes, and you have a little bit of – potatoes don't like wet feet. So in this case, I'm actually considering reorienting the rows to go north and south to take advantage of the 1.5 to 1% of slope to get a little bit of drainage. And then the picture on the right-hand side, that's just kind of the same area that affected our tomatoes. That's just showing more of the area of where we right now have green beans that got really stunted, so they're not very tall in that spot right there. We are getting a little bit of harvest off of them. So
this is an unusual year for the moisture. Generally, August and July, late July.
Oh, yeah. Usually August, you're asking for rain. So.
But you had flooding in the spring in the planting when I was out there. There was the same issues with the tomatoes in May and June.
May was the only time, except for one day in early August when I planted some fall cabbages when we irrigated. Otherwise, we haven't done any irrigation since May. But it's not really the irrigation issue. It's more of just timeliness of cultivating, weeding. So our potato crop does not look as pretty as that right now. The month of August, we weren't able to cultivate early in August. So we got a flush of weeds that we just mowed off the weeds so we can dig the potatoes right now. So
would soil, like compost treatment, help this at all, or?
We're going to be adding a lot of, I'm talking with the city to see, with Jen Jordan, to see if we can get some leaves out there to incorporate into, to add more organic matter, as well as to, yeah, continue building that up. Another strategy is we want to do what's building raised beds next year, so our, all of our beds are just, our garden is flat, so we would build up these little 6-inch, pretty, if you consider them ridges with the flat top on them, and we'd plant on top of that. So our plants would actually be a little bit higher than the row, the walking spaces between the rows. So it keeps the roots of the plants a little bit drier, and keeps more of the water and a heavy rain in between the rows. And that's just a small implement that on my tractor that would create those raised beds. That's another thing that we'll probably do next year.
So. I can bring you a lot of leaves.
I can too.
Yeah.
Minor.
Well, why can't they just drop by a load of leaves? I mean, when they suck them up from us and. Oh, that's why?
Get a lot of weeds and trash.
Okay.
Oh. Weeds come in. I haven't heard back from Jen yet, so yeah. Yeah, Cedar. I do have a livestock farmer west of town that has expressed he has a lot of composted just bedding manure from his barn that's probably a couple years old that's just been composted in a pile, and he's willing to provide it too for us to put on this fall yet also.
I think the fact that you're getting some of these offers is a reflection on the fact that you guys have gotten such good publicity this year. You know, I mean, I've seen so many articles and positive things on social media, et cetera, and I think that's much to your credit, and I think that's probably resulting in some of the, I think there's a lot of support out there. As soon as people learn what you're doing, they want to know if they can help. So,
yeah, it's been really encouraging. Absolutely.
Kind of echo what Mickey said, when you do get that, be careful, because you got hay, you get those weeds pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah. Another strategy to kind of alleviate some of the wet spots next year, so all of our winter squash, we'll probably only get about 20 spaghetti squash out of thousands of squash we should have had. Mm-hmm. So we direct seeded all of our, so we actually planted seeds instead of transplants for all of our winter squash, and then we had several inches of rain for a week after that, and most of our seeds rotted. So we'll be transplanting all of our winter squash next year. So that 10,000 pounds, we probably would have had another 2,000 to 3,000 pounds of just winter squash if we would have had that full crop this year. Same with our sweet corn crops. We actually seeded twice. The first seeding, we had very poor germination because of really wet soil. So maybe won't even do sweet corn next year, just because of that issue. People do transplant sweet corn, something I'm not interested in doing, so.
So yeah, you might be reading this a little bit, but we're just kind of looking to next year as in regards to food production education, and we feel as a group that we are ready and capable for more land, and I know Jason has a good plan that I can show you too, but we're more than willing to go through the RFP process to propose that, but I do feel like we are more capable to handle more food production. We definitely have a really strong team that can manage it, so. And one thing, too, that we've talked about is finding a way to directly distribute to some of the smaller rural agencies that Table-to-Table isn't always too able to serve, just because they have so many routes, and our harvest is sometimes not congruent with where they're headed that day. So that'll just take more volunteer mobilization to put teams together, people who can drive out to some of these smaller organizations.
Are those within the county?
Yes, within the county. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Especially in the rural areas. I was at a meeting last week with the Heritage Agency on Aging with Tim Getty, and they're developing some backpack programs similar to like the school backpack programs with HACAP, but for elderly, and they want produce in there, and they're going to be doing some distribution in the rural areas, and I expressed interest. We'd be willing to help provide some of the produce for that, because there isn't pantries out in the rural area that we can use as our distribution point. So.
And we already have pantries from Hills and Lone Tree that will come up and meet our vans on the regular route. So it would just be a matter of if they're already traveling up here, and we can coordinate on a day when there's produce at the farm, maybe they can just swing by and get some and take it back down to them, because it's more cost effective for us to have them come up and meet us than us to go down there.
Still, with this separation to a standalone nonprofit, table to table would still remain the major distribution of grow.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
yeah, because we have the system in place, and it does, you know, so it just makes absolute sense to just have them, you know, like they are now. They're another one of our donors that goes into the system, and we distribute it out.
I just don't want to see us 4 or 5 years from now having a redundant system. I mean, table to table works, but for it's urban based because of the routes. And if Grow adds some things to that, that's cool. But I don't ever want it to, like, redundant table to tables work. I mean,
yeah, I don't think we have an interest in taking over table to tables work. We want to make sure the produce also gets out to the rural communities too. So, and table to table can do a lot of that. But we know we have volunteers who might be some from those communities. So they can just take a van load to a pantry. So. Not sure what you're going to say.
Well, I was just going to say, in our strategic planning meeting, we talked about our biggest kind of niche or importance as an organization, as a group and initiative, is we can be the supplier. We don't want to be the distributor. We don't want to be the marketer or anything like that. So that's what makes Grow different than other things that are happening, is we're a supplier, and that can be for any types of programs. You know, it was great when Field of Families reached out to us, like, could we use some of your produce for this? Because it just expands partnership opportunities. So
how much more land do you see that you could handle in the next couple of years?
Well, personally,
getting to the next slide.
Oh, no.
Is that the next slide?
It is, yeah, if you want to.
Well, I'm personally think we could, in a partnership structure, actually work with some of the groups that Shanti has had interest from, the immigrant individuals, as well as maybe other populations within the community that are looking for food production, land to grow food for themselves, whether it's a community garden, to kind of be the group that helps provide some tools, structure to that space, kind of looking over, doing any mowing around it, whatever it may be. So this is just when I've been starting to think about how to reorient some of our rows, I started to kind of think about how to use the next adjacent 3.5 acres. So putting these hoop house up towards the buildings we're using right now, you see the little wet spot that's right above that one star at the upper right-hand corner. That's the kind of wet area that we'd probably take out of production. The area on the bottom left, that kind of long stretch area, that's a drainage way that a lot of water. We're just on the northern edge of that right now, so that we had watermelon planted in it. All of our watermelon died in that section, so we'd probably just take it out of production and keep that to some native plants, grasses that we can mow or maintain.
Put pollinators in there.
Yeah, and then work around fields around that. On the bottom far left-hand corner, that would be an area we would probably keep out of production too, because Shanti and Conservation noticed that once the cover crop was planted there, we had one of those big gully washer rains, and that was an area where there was some erosion. It's right at the top of a slough that goes towards the southwest. So just to protect that, conservation-wise, we'd keep that piece out of production. But otherwise, in the center lower area, you see smaller plots. That would be an area that we could potentially propose that would be how we could, if people are looking for land to grow food for themselves, give plots to individuals or families or groups, and then we could help provide all the tilling, mowing around it, and then possibly even provide tools and water, you know, access. Right now we have the permit with the county or with the city for the meter on the hydrant. And then we have all of the water lines coming out to the site. So we could create different tees and meter, sub-meter stuff off of that too. So, and as you see, I added in some kind of thoughts of maybe bushes or trees that could be perennial crops. We are, Scott and I have been thinking one easy perennial crop we could do next year would be adding in some strawberries, which would be like a 2-year crop, and then we'd start over and plant again. something that we can transplant and then put in some mulch and stuff around them as a perennial thing to have. We're just kind of sad that you only get maybe one or two crops depending on which variety you plant a year. So,
the everbearing.
You know, as you lay this out, Jason, it makes me think about whoever would respond to an RFP. I mean, your experience on the land is critical. You know, you've learned a lot, and whoever would respond hopefully would be open to the kind of thing that you've laid out, because it's, I mean, you've put a lot of thought into it. You've got experience and expertise and knowledge that maybe they would have, maybe they wouldn't, but I would want them to certainly want to work with you on this kind of thing.
Is there any way, this popped into my head, of taking places where the water pools up and then kind of channeling it to places that maybe don't get, I mean, this year every place has gotten water, but, you know, I'm talking about in a normal year, taking those places where it tends to collect and then getting it to areas.
Yeah, there could be some swales built to help kind of capture and maybe move water very slowly at a very, you know, don't run it down a steep slope so you don't have more erosion issues. It would just be more additional cost because it's not equipment that we would have or I would have to be able to bring in. We'd have to pay someone. Or
there's not an easy way.
I mean, there's shovels, but I don't think we can get very many volunteers to come and help us dig long swales. So, and I mean, we just feel like it's going to be beneficial for our gardens out there to have more natural spaces to provide more pollinator habitat. Some of our cover crops actually came back. Like, we had crimson clover planted in our cover crop that was planted out there in 2015, and some of it bloomed again here this spring, and it was beautiful when it was blooming, but just the number of bees that were just out there when we're early spring when we were planting stuff. So we actually mowed around stuff out there when Quality Care would come out there and mow for us. So,
unless there's any other questions about prior stuff we touched on, just want to acknowledge our partners, which you all are huge, which leveraged a lot of these other relationships that we were able to build, and the list continues to grow, and we're really encouraged by that and excited about the future too. And as we mentioned, we still see our core tenets as being charitable food production and education, and within that we see opportunities for conservation, and just I think other ways to partner with other community groups and be a mentor, and just hopefully empower more people to participate in local food production, with the end goal of making our community healthier and providing easier access to healthy foods for especially people who are in marginalized populations. So I think that's all we have
for this presentation.
But yeah.
One, I saw the wagon of melons. Were they raised out here, or was that at Oakdale campus?
All the melons were raised out there. That was probably our most successful crop this year. I've never had better cantaloupe in my life.
And are you still looking at some point to put fruit trees out there, things like that?
Yeah, we're interested. We haven't done any solid planning related to it or talked about what kind of trees we would do. So.
You're talking about honeybees. This was the year for peach trees. They're just bees everywhere.
Yep.
So
I know another thing that we have to discuss today that's also on the agenda is the reassignment of the lease. Obviously, when we started this project, Grow was kind of existed on paper, but really the lease was with Table to Table.
Correct.
So now Grow, correct me if I'm wrong, is a 501c3 standalone on its own, correct?
We don't have our own tax-exempt status. We're under the fiscal sponsorship right now of the Community Foundation of Johnson County.
Okay.
They provide fiscal sponsorship for new organizations for 1 to 2 years, so we started that back in February.
Okay. And so what are you folks requesting then in terms of the lease?
It would make sense for it to just be under Grow Johnson County. So we are an entity recognized by the state, just don't have our own independent tax-exempt status yet. So we have an EIN number, that sort of thing. So, yeah, we would request that it be just through Grow Johnson County, not table to table.
Yeah, we just make it smoother.
So it's confusing to me, though, you're not a nonprofit yet.
Right, so we're a business. We're incorporated with the state, and we just have to go through the process. If the board chooses to become our own independent 501c3, we would file this Form 1023 to the IRS to get tax-exempt status. But that's not something we've
I don't know that the county would want to contract with an entity that isn't a nonprofit yet.
Right, well, we are through the Community Foundation, if that makes sense.
So the lease would be with the Community Foundation?
No, they don't want the lease attached to that. we are the organization.
This may be the kind of thing, because I don't know anything about what you're talking about, yeah. But we may want to have our assistant county attorney take a look at that just to make sure that it meets his muster.
Yeah, and it wasn't it was more an idea of being logical, since the fiscal agent status is now with the Community Foundation, and now that they have Grow Johnson County as status with the state, that it would just make more sense to move that over. And speaking to an earlier question, with the liability insurances, we provided that information. We table to table had to put a liability rider on the 2 acres, just like Grow Johnson County had to provide insurance, and we went through the county attorney for that and provided that evidence. Okay. So that was an earlier question.
Andy Johnson, do you know, has Andy Chappell looked at this at all?
So we've talked about it, and I don't know that he's looked at the actual documentation. I guess I thought you were a 501c3, but we have talked about the assignment, and he said, I mean, the lease provides that they request that table to table if they're doing it. So I've got an email from Bob indicating that they have that request. So this was kind of the initial discussion,
right,
with the board about it. Obviously we'd look at the paperwork.
So then we'd ask our civil attorney to take a look at that, and presuming mm-hmm. everything's okay, then we could deal
doesn't
with
that create an issue as far as tax issues and things like that, and as a nonprofit organization?
It's all funneled through the Community Foundation. So they're our fiscal entity, and so they're the tax-exempt write-off. A donor would use their tax ID number to report that at the end of the year.
Just like the crisis center and those.
So are board members comfortable then asking our civil attorneys to take a look at that?
And I am.
I am too.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have them take a look at that.
I have one other question over there. We've talked about the expanding the space out there for gardens. Do you see in our best interest to maybe run a couple field tiles down through that area? Not necessarily tile the whole farm, but relieve some of that. Is the additional part going to have the wet areas as well?
I don't know if it would specifically help, but I think it would be worth considering and exploring from an actual engineer, civil engineer that would have the experience and knowledge related to it.
Only if we're going to tile into a bioswale or something.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't want to be a contributor to the water quality downstream.
I think it's that starts to get into the kind of thing, I think, when we're looking at the whole farm and
yeah,
how
the
it
bigger
all.
Plan.
I think that has to be part of it.
If yeah, because you want to have outlets relate, or you want the tile outlets to be coordinated with something, and
right,
not just dump at a haphazardly way. Yeah. So
everyone across Iowa is dumping haphazardly. I don't want to be part of the problem.
I mean, the most successful model that I've seen at Grinnell Heritage Farm is they field tiled their whole farm after a couple of years of this kind of drainage issue, but none of their tiles dump in any creek or anything. They dump into their pond that then they reuse for irrigation.
Right.
So longer term, you could create strategies like that to keep all your water on site and don't send it somewhere else. Use it to your advantage.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a little bit as a possibility for the bigger farm.
Yeah, your bigger plan. Yep.
I wanted to ask about on your plans for the future. There was something about partnering with inmates or correctional detention system. And I'd like to know a little bit more about that. I think I saw a picture recently. Was it you, Bob, with somebody
working with inmates with growing stuff. And
yeah,
all
so,
the peppers yeah. came from there, right?
Yep, all the peppers in that photo that we showed. But yeah, Scott Kepke, our education director, he's been spending all summer and part of last spring at the IMCC Oakdale facility and also a youth detention center in Cedar Rapids, just kind of helping grow their gardening program. Yeah. And so that's been part of what Devin, who's our MSW practicum student this year, she will be doing some research. There's a lot of programming out there that's considered restorative justice programming, just to see what the feasibility would be to utilize an off-site gardening alternative to incarceration, things like that, just things to explore. But at the very least, there are different groups in the community who represent formerly incarcerated individuals, and you know, we'd like to network with those groups to see if they can help us with labor and participate and provide positive relationships.
I think
with
that's
those individuals.
A great idea because it also gives them skills for reentry.
And that load of peppers that were in that picture was the first load. I mean, Scott exudes his passion about gardening, and he's working with the group at the prison. And so they have they grow for the prison itself for the needs of the cafeteria. They also have a small little green market within the system itself where they can sell to other inmates. But then they also wanted to give back to the community with their excess produce. In this case, it was all those peppers, you know. And so they really Scott's worked with the warden to allow them to donate some of that back into the county at large, uh-huh. and allow us to distribute it back into the system as well. So it's becoming a really interesting partnership, and something that we didn't really anticipate when they started doing that networking. But it's a great opportunity for more fresh produce beside what we're doing out at Grow to get into the system as well. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, one kind of cool thing that Scott just lately was able to find out, he teaches a class at Kirkwood. I think it's four or five classes in Cedar Rapids, and he just got approval to actually do that class at Oakdale for inmates, and they will actually be given credit by taking that class with him. And so that would be something that is useful for them once they leave Oakdale and move back into society. And I think that Grow could also be a great place for them to get real-world experience, put on a resume related to farming if they're interested in that. He said he's worked with a couple individuals that work in their five-acre vegetables that they would love to be farmers once they get out, but they need the name on a resume or a reference to help them with that place, and we can possibly help with that.
Like we said, even if you decide to do something completely different, just the idea that somebody can say, yes, you know, Jason showed up and he worked hard and he was on time and he did what he was asked to do means a lot. So,
well, thanks for asking, Lisa.
Yeah.
Anything else?
So then the other thing that's in your packet is, and this is also just kind of a conversation starter, is that we had... So the lease covers the 2 acres that they're growing. There have been discussions. We know that they're using parts of the lean-to. They're having education events on other parts of it. And so there was a discussion about kind of laying out some specific expectations. And so it's been sort of a long time in the making. Shanti and I and several others met with them out at the property, and we kind of went around and talked about all the different areas. And so Andy Chappell has put that into a draft agreement as sort of a way to get that started. It might be the way the timing has worked out, we might kind of hold off on it with this RFP coming back in a month. It might be that, you know, we won't necessarily get too far with that at this point, but I just wanted to get it in front of you so you had an idea of, and as well as these gentlemen, and see what kind of things we're providing. And
I think that makes some sense to figure out where the RFP is headed first and then negotiate the final piece of that.
The whole reassigning the contract and the buildings, but you want to, or hoop, you want to put that up in October. The timing still works. Because if she puts out the RFP tomorrow and she wants somewhere close to 30 days, the first couple of weeks in October, we're going to know what we're going to do. And it's going to take that long to get the city to respond to a group building anyway.
I was going to say, we can start working on the city now.
Because we're making the assumption now that your hoop building would go on the 2 acres you already have. If you've got an RFP for more acres, that may change. But the logistics of getting that approval is the same, whether it's here or here, from the city. So parallel work on all these things. But I do want to hear from the county attorney about a lease and liability and all of that with an entity that doesn't really exist.
I mean, I presume Andy will, I mean, he knows we got that question, so, you know, I presume he'll address it, so. All right. Thank you, folks. We appreciate it very much. Board interested in a 2 or 3 minute break here, and then we'll come back to the next issue? Okay.
The next issue is still the poor farm.
Yeah.
Goes fast.
Yeah. All right. Looks like everybody's back. Let's go ahead and go back into session. The third item on our agenda here is obviously a related matter, and that's additional updates and issues regarding the Poor Farm property. And this is kind of a catch-all. I think Andy would acknowledge this was just really there because we had people here that were talking about this kind of thing. Was there anything else we needed to talk about? Does anybody have a restroom update? I know that would be one thing.
I was
thing.
Out there yesterday, and they were coming along. They were doing the final hookups. The city was coming out. Actually, the inspector was out there, and it was ready for the water meter. But they had to contact the city to do that. So it's in place. It's looking good.
When we got the picture, we had decided these would be unisex. They came male, female. Eldon told me he ordered the signs to make the two bathrooms unisex. I don't know if those...
They're signed.
Are they unisex now?
Mm-hmm.
So they must have come in.
Yeah.
And then he said something about the key, how we could lock it. And he that company had some technology, but I can't tell you the details. Because what we didn't want to do is have someone have to drive there.
Right.
And so we had talked to Freeman Lock and Alarm, but that company we bought this from had another system. So I don't know the details. Maybe Eldon could just write us a paragraph and let us know what he's decided on that. But
he
stopped me in the hallway.
Be nice to be able to do something remotely from here and not have to go all the way out there. But
it looks, I was out there on Friday when I was picking up. It looks like they're going to have ramps if they are accessible, but they're going to need to.
Oh, some concrete.
Concrete ramps to get the chairs up in there.
did you talk to Eldon about that or just?
Not yet. Okay. But I mean, unless they've
it
already done it.
It probably may be just how they finish it when.
Yeah,
they...
there's about a 3 or 4 inch rise.
Yeah, you're right.
But the signage foundation. Looks good. It just says closed.
Do not use water.
Do not, yeah.
It looks like you have to be in a wheelchair to use that. So.
They were all locked up, so.
All right. Anything else about the Poor Farm that we need to discuss? Andy, did you have anything else in mind when you had this on there?
Nope. Okay. We've started conversations with HBK about that process. Right. They're reviewing a contract and.
Yeah, we don't have the contract yet, but as soon as we do, I think we'll get very cozy with our HBK friends. As soon as we have a contract there. Shanti, Mickey, anybody else, anything to add with that? Okay. All right. We appreciate you all coming in on this. Thanks. Let's move on then to Iowa Department of Transportation grant opportunity to support the hiring of a mobility manager. And we've got Tom Braze here with us for that. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I also, Brock Grannis from ECI, East Central Iowa Council of Governments. With the mobility manager position, there's some funding out by the state of Iowa and the Iowa DOT for this. And there's two pots of this funding. There's some from rural money that has about $700,000, I believe, in it. And then there's some urban, which has close to about $100,000. And there's been interest in some people getting together to talk about the possibilities of a mobility manager, which is geared to getting transportation for those in need in social service areas and everything like that. They were supposed to work with Human Service in the area to find transportation for them and meet that need. It's a wide gamut of things that this person could possibly do, coordinate trips, go to meetings, put out a website, do fixed route travel training, work with Human Services for just finding, educating people, such as people learning the new MCOs, management care organizations, and how to get trips. And so I've met with Chris O'Brien, Brad Newman, Brock, Mike Carberry, Jeremy Inslee, and a few others about this topic a couple different times at different meetings. Did you?
Yeah. That's a good start.
You had kind of a proposal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a proposal. There's... I think Janelle put it well the other day. There's three different options that are possible for this mobility manager. I mean, we could have it under the MPO, which they may have difficulty doing, but it could be part of seats, which would be put in the contract, which may be the best option. There would be to have it possibly somebody else overseeing it, because once you get into transportation, it lacks the Human Service side, and there's a plus to having it on underneath the Human Service supervision, pretty much. And we just meet the transportation needs. The Iowa City and Coralville seem into this and would be very plus. They especially like the travel trainer. They like to get the urban part of the money, possibly for a MV1, which is like a minivan, only bigger, for riding people. So it has the option there of getting transportation on weekends, nights.
Basically the accessible taxi we've lacked for forever and ever.
Yes, exactly. We've run some numbers. We've got
Tom, before you get to the numbers, can Mike like fill in some holes?
So we've been talking about this for a couple months. It was the DOT that Jeremy Johnson Miller approached us. This is money that's going to go away if they don't use it. They kind of looked at this map that I passed around where all the other mobility managers are and really identified Johnson County as probably the most likely place that could really use a mobility manager. And this is our kind of things that we've kind of needed for a while. And, you know, this position is really a transit social worker. To be able to connect our social service agencies within the county and all the agencies that we give block grants to, most all of them have their clients have transportation needs, and so this mobility manager can do all sorts of things, you know, the travel training, but also a trip advisor. Say somebody needs transportation and they don't know how they're going to get to where they need to go, they call up the mobility manager and said, I need help. What's the most efficient way for me to get the services that I need at the least affordable price? You know, whether it be free or low cost, and that mobility manager will have all those connections with all the transit operators, all the social services that provide transportation, maybe even Uber and the taxis as well. They will help that individual, that client, come up with a plan on transportation. And so another thing they'll be able to do is reduce the number of trips probably used on our paratransit service seats by training people that ordinarily are using seats now, but theoretically could ride the buses, because all our buses are very capable of handling people with accessibility needs. Sometimes they just need someone to help them figure out how to do it and maybe give them a little bit of training. And so those are the two, and there's other things they can do as well as needed. And so we looked at a couple different ways to do this. Is it going to be an employee or a contractor? Is this a full-time job? Is this a part-time job? Then we've kind of come to the conclusion that it's probably best to be an employee, and it's probably best to be, say, a 25 to 30 hour a week job, depending on how many, on how we write the job description and how many tasks we give that person. So, okay, so it's going to be a job. Where's the job going to be housed? Well, one of the things we wanted to do was put it in the MPO, because to try to get, it's easier to get funding from all the other entities if it's at the MPO. That was a little bit problematic. One is there's a short time frame for this grant. It's due at the end. We've got 30 days now, about a month. The next MPO meeting is the 28th of September. 3 days later, or 2 days later, the grant is due. So we basically came up with our best option would be that this would be a job housed as a pilot project in Johnson County, and we would basically have agreement from both Iowa City and Coralville to chip in. And this is an 80-20 match, so we only, for 2 years, our group has to come up with 20%. Now, Tom had run a few numbers, but it's our 20% match is going to be about $10,000 a year divided by the entities that are taking place, which is when you start breaking up $10,000 three ways, it's not a lot of money for anybody. I mean, say Johnson County paid half of it, $5,000, and maybe Iowa City paid $3,500 and Coralville paid $1,500. And then we start, as we negotiate the next seat contract, if we decide to move forward and keep this position, we actually write this in, and that's just the funding mechanism that would come through the seats contract. But this is really a social services job. And so I sat down with Lynette a few times, and she's been looped in on this. And, you know, we've given her, we've given many departments, we've awarded them new employees before. And she is seems to be amenable to getting a new one. And I think that, and I won't speak for her, but I do think that she wasn't hesitant.
I feel much better about the idea, knowing that we, it's no secret I've been concerned about the county picking up the whole bill for this.
Yeah.
And I feel much better about the idea of it being worked into the contracts, so that it's just part of it, so that if you have one person in University Heights that uses the service, that they would pay something for it or whatever. I can see where there's benefit to having the person reply to Tom. I can see why there's benefit to having the person reply to Lynette. Why are we choosing Lynette versus Tom?
Well, without defending Lynette, you might want to grab a microphone. Because Lynette wasn't even at the meeting I was at. So, but Mike and I are MPO representatives, so I got brought into an MPO meeting this week to talk about whether this should be housed at MPO. They are not unwilling, let's start with that. But as we all know, their board of directors is all the entities, and they are actually employees of the city. And so the ability to get it in MPO in the short, like a 1 month turnaround, is impossible. So the idea of this pilot program came up. But the other problem is that after the death of Linda Severson, the growth of the county's social services department, the MPO no longer does any social services programming. They are transit planners. And Brock could explain this more than me, but there's something about the difference. So we haven't written off the MPO idea, but we can talk about it in this two-year pilot, but it just can't get done in 1 month. I mean, I think that's the bottom. But there are a lot of reasons why the MPO may not be a good choice regardless. Now, why social services versus transit has to do with the programming of transit. And so Brad Newman at MPO had highly encouraged us not to house it in transit, and Tom can tell you why. But there is a programming issue about transit can't be spent on it. Anyway, please tell us why.
Well, maybe Brock has a better answer to that. But for transit to be doing the human service and meeting the needs and stuff, there's just not as much outreach, and we're overseeing something that really is meant for those who need the transportation, who have more in touch with the people that do that transportation. There are some trouble spots that come up. I think ECOG had a couple of those come up when they had them housed at ECOG, and Brock can tell you a little bit about that.
And mostly we're here because we're talking about the grant funding. The transit system has to apply for the grant funding. In this case, it'd be Iowa City, Coralville, or ourselves. And the DOTIs were recognized the transit system. So when we're using the grant money, they're very particular with what those funds are used for. And if this position was used to do non-transit activities, in their eyes, they could pull back that grant funding.
And I mean, I'm fine with the idea of Lynette doing it so long as Lynette feels like she can take on another. But it is interesting, if you look at this list, it only looks like one is not an employee of an MPO or a transit system. I mean, there's only one that's like in a private, which is okay. I mean, maybe this is the best way for us to do it. But, you know, clearly other people are doing it, but I don't care. I mean, I guess I'm more wanting to make sure Lynette feels like this is something she has the capacity to do.
At one point at this last meeting, Mike's been meeting for months, but it was said, well, maybe they are an employee of transit and seats, meaning Tom, but they're still housed in the social services wing. And then Tom's like, how exactly am I supposed to manage someone who's doing mostly social services work? I mean, I don't have any knowledge of this. Maybe the reverse happens, is they're housed here, they're an employee of Lynette, but Tom is the advisor, like, you know, we're now sharing employees in a lot of departments. But he, to your credit, you're like, that's fine. I think we should have the mobility coordinator, and if you want me to manage this person, fine. But they really need to be housed downtown, not out at the West Campus. I mean, so Tom, if you're flexible, right? You don't care.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, you just said, how do I manage someone who's mainly doing social services? I don't.
A seats contract, the money comes back into the general fund anyway, so you know that's neither here nor there. I just want, my only concern was that Lynette is.
So let's hear from Lynette.
Yeah, I'm not clear on this. It looks to me like you say you have $700,000, which it shows regional JARC, whatever that is, and NF projects, each $380,000. What is the difference? What are those, and how long is this for? I mean, I don't want to end up with doing something, then end up all falling back on the county's cost.
It is a two-year grant.
80-20 on both the equipment and on the mobility manager. And we have to, in our grant application, provide a sustainability plan on how we plan on funding this after the 2 years.
So and we have to do it after 2 years?
No, we don't. We can let it go. If it's not working out, I mean,
that's the plan, is when you do it right, the grant is you're supposed to do it.
But the idea of building it into the contract path, then the cities would ostensibly be responsible for, if there's 10 people from Coralville that this person helps plan their transit, Coralville would pay for those 10 people.
So, but I see that probably taking longer than a month for the cities to approve and get the contract together to do it.
Well, it wouldn't be that.
MPO.
It would be a pilot program at first. It would not be part of the seats contract.
That's 2 years from now.
That's 2 years
from now.
So you want to put it under the seats contract, not
eventually.
A separate contract.
So right now, and this is hypothetical, there's been a strong indication from Iowa City and Coralville that they'll write us checks tomorrow. It'd be the county applying, and our sustainability plan would be to negotiate this into our paratransit contract.
Correct.
But for right now, it wouldn't be an amendment to the paratransit. It would just, it's kind of like how we funded community ID or we funded the railroad study.
Yeah. Right.
They put up 3,500, they put up 2,000, we put up X. We do this as a pilot, and a year from now, we'll still have one more year on the grant, but that's when we'll be negotiating paratransit.
Right.
And we will have had a year to decide whether or not we think this is beneficial. But it's, you know, and paratransit is just the mechanism to make everybody who's doing transit pay in. I mean, you know, because they have the most to gain by diverting someone who would otherwise take paratransit to a fixed route or to some other mechanism. It we could make, you know, negotiate this to be back in how we pay for it as MPO. We could negotiate how we pay for it as a separate 28E, where all the entities are reimbursing us. I mean, but we would at least be able to get the grant application in, get a year under our belts, and it's only 80-20 for 2 years. If we wanted to continue it after that, we would have to have another funding mechanism.
I'd say the community is more obligated to the MPO than they would be to us and continue it in the end rather than us trying to pull them back.
And a year from now, that may be the route we choose. It just can't get done in a month.
Chris,
to remember, the MPO is just a channel for grants to go through. So it would be really stationed out of Iowa City or Coralville Transit if that went through the MPO. We're a recipient of money through ECI, COG, who is a East Central Iowa Transit. So they are a transit agency that could receive that money for us. And that's, I believe, how they work it up there. And
what you're saying is it's transit, it's not...
Transit agencies got to receive the money. So the MPO to have that would not really be receiving the money.
Then you have to get it.
No, ECI COG.
If I go through East Central Iowa Council of Governments or East Central Transit, then we receive the money. And that's where we're proposing to do
that.
So what
is JARC?
Access Reverse Commute.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
Job Access Reverse Commute.
It's for jobs.
Which
it's getting people the jobs and back.
And that's why in a year from now, paratransit may not be the best funding mechanism because it may not just be about paratransit. But we need to buy some, if we want this, which, I mean, regularly I'm confronted with people who can't get to their jobs because of transportation, hotels who can't get their hotels re-rented on Sunday nights because nobody can get there to clean it. So we would have some time. It may be that a new 28E of how we fund it is the partnership, or it may be the MPO, but MPO will never be the recipient of the grant because they don't hold the credentials that ECI COG does. So regardless of where the funding went, MPO would not be the recipient of it.
And that's why with some of these, with their regional offices, RAPs or whatever, they can receive transit funding for these.
Because they're like ECI costs.
So what's an NF project then? What's NF?
No, that is a New Freedoms. That's another program real similar to JARC. It's a grant program. The reason they're kind of pushing to get these money spent is because the federal transportation language expired, so these problems are going to be non-existent in 2 years.
Yeah. So they brought up another issue here. Not an issue, but the benefit of this mobility manager also, and I knew there was a third one other than travel training and paratransit, was the access for people that with work-related transit issues. Mm-hmm. Like, and this is one of the reasons that Shelter House is so interested in this, and then the Inside Out programs. So people that we were talking about this just 10 minutes ago when we were talking about Grove Johnson County, mm-hmm. how they're growing vegetables out at Oakdale. But, you know, when someone gets released, they have they need a job, and a lot of times they don't have adequate transportation, and the mobility manager can help them do that. So
we have to stop calling it a manager, though, because it's going to escalate the job.
Coordinator.
Coordinator.
I'd like to hear from Lynette on your thoughts on this.
Well, I think it's a great idea. I mean, on a daily basis, the transportation is a barrier that individuals encounter, particularly those that are accessing social services. So I think this makes a lot of sense to have somebody that can help connect them to resources. I do think it's would be a steep learning curve, and we would need a lot of assistance from the different departments in getting up to speed about the transit options and eligibility for those services. But, you know, I think that's all stuff that can be learned knowledge, and I think it would have to really be a joint or quite a collaboration across departments. But, you know, I think we've been really successful with that. Yesterday spent the morning with Becky learning about sustainability and with Mid-American Energy. Who knew? You know, I think it would be a good collaboration, and that it's very doable. It also falls in line with my vision. I mean, this is me going a step further. I really would like to see our department move in the direction where we have folks that are assisting individuals not only with transportation, but having that care coordination piece that is really lacking in this community. I've mentioned before that we have a lot of silos in this community. We have folks that work with the homeless population, with veterans, with early childhood. But we don't have folks that fit nice and neat in these silos, and sometimes they have multiple caregivers. Right. Some have no idea how to even access any sort of service or get into the system to have even a siloed caseworker. So at some point, it's my vision that we would have workers in the county that really help folks navigate the system. We're doing it on a real small scale right now with the General Assistance Program. Jesse and Sue will offer support to folks who maybe not even eligible for general assistance, but need help getting in touch with other services. So I really see this as a conduit for that, a connection, because again, this is another silo. It's the transportation silo, right. But nobody ever really fits nice and neat in those silos.
It's a compliment to both Lynette and Tom that we just tend to give you guys employees and stuff. New jobs and titles and things without you asking for them, because we trust that you're both very capable of doing this stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a compliment to both of you that we always have a tendency to go, well, they can do that, because you've always proven in the past that you can. So,
well, at least we asked this time.
We kind of asked. You've been having months of meetings and forgot to tell her. So if we apply for this and we asked Iowa City and Coralville to partner with us in the pilot, and a year from now we will explore we'll be exploring it, how we keep it permanent. But are you willing to supervise this? Are you getting that hallway? Did you get it yet?
No, but we have taken over some space in the Cove with our students in AmeriCorps housed over there, and Sherry is still over there, and there may be some shuffling down the road.
Because we were told that mental health was giving up the rest of the hallway and you were taking it over. That hasn't happened.
Well, no, not yet. Okay. And our hope really is also to move Lori and Alicia upstairs. So that would take a couple of office spaces as well. But we really need to have more contact with them. And I think there's the issue, too. It's quite busy hallway downstairs, so there's lots of disruptions.
Well, You know, Pat and I had a conversation with Jan Shaw about that a while ago. And, you know, she said it was a goal of hers. She did not say by this date or whatever. I think it's as simple as, I mean, we can just send an email and say, coordinate with Lynette and pick a date. Obviously, people have a lot of junk in their offices and it takes them a little while to move, but we just need a date.
Yeah, but if all that happens, you're okay with managing this position if we got the grant, as long as Tom's not off the hook?
That's fine with me.
Yeah.
Because he's also willing to manage it, but he's like, I don't know anything about social services. Do you really want me to learn that? I mean,
sure.
You know, and I think it's more about social services than it is about transit. I mean, I think this is awkward,
right,
even though it's a transit grant. But it's about the barriers to living life fully and the barriers to working and the barriers to success. And transit is a major part of that, but it's a lot more about social.
Right.
Corville and Iowa City have indicated they're partners. We would clearly have to officially ask them and then say it's a pilot and that we would renegotiate later at some other later date. But in the grant application, we have to express a sustainable funding, right?
Yes, that's what the big thing is here. The meeting is we got to get moving ahead for the grant.
Yeah. And
in the short term, I would say the sustainable funding is it will be negotiated in the paratransit contract. In the long term, that may not be what we choose.
Yes.
I mean,
you can get out of it.
And there is, we've seen, I think, in the past, and at least I've been told, that there has been movement of these mobility managers on how they're funded, where they're housed, that sort of thing. And so things, they're not kind of in, their feet are not in concrete. You know, if they find that it's better to house them in this social service agency than they are. In Cedar Rapids, Horizons houses the mobility manager. And so if this doesn't work out the way we have it set up, we're not locked into it. We can change. Right. Yeah.
So,
well,
Tommy,
the way you have this listed, it's showing 700,000, I think. And then bottom chart shows 68 and 49, so that's what, $117,000. Is there a difference between urban and rural, and who shares what cost? I mean,
yes, there is a difference in urban.
So we would be responsible for the 700,000 portion?
No, we're not responsible for any of that. That's what's available for grant money. And
I'm talking about future.
I mean, future.
Future. Take a percentage of who gets
they
what.
They want grants to say they're sustainable and that they could show that there would be sustainability in getting that eventually going on. But you're not hard-lined into making sure that happens.
Can you show the math? Because
the document
the
that
sticker
you're looking
shock
at,
will go away.
The document you're looking at came from the DOT, and it indicates all of their funding, not just what we're asking for.
So there could be.
This is a state. This spreadsheet, or not spreadsheet, this was put out on July 12th. We got this from Jeremy Johnson Miller.
This is statewide dollars.
This is statewide dollars.
Yeah, we're only talking like six. Can you?
I didn't
that
see
up.
That.
I just put up what we had from the meeting about. Okay. I just put it in that. I can.
I mean, we're only a small portion of this.
Yeah, we ran some numbers.
No, but
yesterday.
Can you put up the numbers, Tom? You have in front of you.
Oh, for
so that's different numbers. Totally.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, we we would have for if you employed a part-time person for 25 hours, and with benefits. With a if they were a family benefit, that would be $47,157.21. If that person just wanted single health coverage, it'd be $41,424.33.
And the number we were kicking around was $50,000 per year, $100,000 total over 2 years. But at an 80-20 match, that's $10,000 a year.
But then the equipment is separate. As a separate grant?
Yes.
That's the MV1. Yeah. That's, we're talking about the rural grant is for the mobility manager.
Right.
The urban grant is for the MV1. And that's
we haven't gone into depth on that
discussion
either. If urban's going to ask back for some of that or whatever.
Well, I think just I mean, this has been something, I mean, people have been talking about for 30 years, and getting it and then worrying about where it has to go, I'd just assume get it in hand.
Yeah.
You mean the vehicle?
Benefits on top of this?
Yeah, I don't care if we're the applicant.
Goes through the urban, so that would be the Iowa City or Corville would have to receive the money for that. And are benefits on top of this wage? Yes. No, for the wages I talked to you and everything, yes. For the $47,157.21, for family, that's the highest possible scenario for 25 hours a week. That would be with benefits. So the benefits are $14,657.21.
And Mike had proposed to you to price it out at 30 hours?
Yes, 30 hours. That the gross pay would be $39,000 then if it was 30 hours at $25. We're estimating high here. One of the places was like $23 an hour for one of these.
Well, if you're going to get a quality person, they're going to have to be paid a decent.
Well, and I think we'd probably need to look, if it's coming in the social services department, we'd also have to look at some of our existing positions and see how that, would this be a collective bargaining position?
Yes.
I mean, I think we'd have to look at our wage charts there and make sure it's in line with other department staff.
I suppose it theoretically could be. That's something we'd have to talk to Laura about, whether it fit.
But the bottom line is, at 30 hours at $25.
The most it would be $54,740.13.
So our local match is $10,800.
Yes.
And so just to get an estimate, we put it just out there. And so then in this month we have to apply for this grant. We would fine-tune all that.
Yes. And I think the soonest they feel like the grant money could start be coming in would be January 1st.
Excellent.
I don't know we're so late on this if everybody else has it in place. This was the money was applied for some of these places way back, and there used to be like 16 mobility managers at one point throughout the state, and now there's 8. The money they thought was sort of spent, they found had not all been spent. So Jeremy from Miller Johnson from the Iowa DOT approached us and let us know that, hey, there's some of this funding out there. I think you guys are the perfect location for coordinating this stuff.
So
Johnson County doesn't have anything. This would be great for helping out. Here's some places to contact and how it's worked for him. Jeremy Miller Johnson was a mobility manager, and so he knows how it can really help the area and the places that he's at. So he's a good person to talk to on that. And now he works for the DOT.
So I think I'm going to reword Pat's question. Johnson County is normally a leader. And in this case, we're not. Why haven't we done even, didn't we not know about this? Or, we seem to be last in line to get a mobility manager. Why haven't we done it before?
Well, let's do it now. And call him a coordinator, not manager.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like they thought the money was spent, so nobody would have applied, and now we realize it's not. So
I'm all for doing this. My only and figuring calling it a pilot, doing whatever we have to do to get the grant application in, and then reevaluating it as this first year goes along about what is the best funding mechanism. But we need this in our county. I mean, I think that, to me, is a given.
Right. And if it doesn't work out after 2 years...
Yeah, you can always stop.
You can stop, and you don't have to take the whole load of the cost.
And you put that in your application, but when you go to hire somebody, this is grant-funded. They know it's a temporary position. Part-time might go away in 2 years.
I think you'll find that it's very advantageous for this area. I think I get more and more transportation committee meetings that are starting up and growing that
could be one
voicing this concern that we need transportation, and a lot of them are through human services that start these.
One benefit for you could just be somebody else to go to some of those meetings.
Having one person that goes to all those meetings.
Whoa, I'm taking on the management. I don't unload some of my committees.
One person going to those meetings and finding and filtering all that information into one spot is a plus.
Yeah.
Do you have room for another meeting? He just gave us a big list the other day.
I can meet with Lynette.
I'm all for this.
I can, you keep data throughout this exploratory time, then that can help you then when you have to go and figure out funding. You know, you supply that, and that can help with it, grant money.
There are a lot of hidden costs that you may not, or savings for the community and people finding jobs out there, and how they their job now help pay taxes and things like that, right, and come back to the community, which I won't be able to track. Maybe
that's
Nan has a better idea on some of that tracking. But
so, would Mickey be writing this?
No. This guy here is going to be writing. Do it.
Because, I mean, can we build in the grant application training, transit, I mean, other costs of this person, and then we our 20% match includes that technology car?
I'd have to check, but I'm pretty certain no in-kind funds would be part of the local match. Is
okay.
That what we're asking?
Yeah, I just didn't know.
Yeah, no, I think they're pretty firm with seeing a
okay.
True. Phone, office, et cetera.
Yeah.
But can we get 80% of some of that or not?
I don't believe so. I'll
okay.
check. Brad Newman with the MPO is going to help put this together.
Yeah.
So Brad couldn't be here today. He had another. But Brad has actually been instrumental in this. And so I'd like to thank Brad for all his work on this, Brock and Tom. I've been in a lot of meetings on this the last 2 months, but I think this is so needed, and I'm so 100% behind both the mobility coordinator position and us getting applying for or working with the cities, whether I was sitting in Coralville, to get the MV1.
Yeah, we need that too.
Yes.
However, that has to happen.
I have a question. I get why we would be calling it a coordinator because of our our
collective bargaining
and all that. But would it be part of getting this to call it a manager? I mean,
well, it
is
starts
that,
out mobility coordinator.
Okay, top. There. But there was something in here that said manager in this thing.
I think we'll just.
That's just on the grant
okay.
form.
Yeah, I see coordinator.
Name
this
it
said
whatever,
one thing, and this
to,
said something different. So I was.
I think Laura is the next step.
Yes.
Yeah.
I see three of these jobs on this page are titled mobility coordinator, and four of them are mobility manager. So I don't think it matters what we call it, but I do want to make sure it's slotted in the right spot, it's paid, and it's
right.
whether it's in the bargaining unit.
Clearly going to have some conversations
with Laura. So.
Since these other communities have it in place, does our 2 years start at the beginning of a grant awarding, or is it?
Yes.
Yes.
Date?
Yep. It start from when, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, it looks like we've got agreement to move forward on this. So get the grant application in, and good luck, and let us know how it goes.
Thank you, Brock.
And Tom and Lynette, we can assume you'll be talking with Laura about the
and Mike. Mike's not off the hook.
No, I can't go away.
He started all this.
The way in which the position
well, thank
is designed.
You.
So.
I can email it to you, too.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all for coming in. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Lynette. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Brock.
Andy, internal processes.
I don't have anything right now, if I can reserve the right to have something in the afternoon.
Of course. Just to remind folks, then, our process the rest of the day, come back at 1:30 sharp because Janet will be here to talk about item number 5. We'll have about an hour there, and then we're going over to public health for site visit and joint meeting. So
okay.
Meet back here at 1:30. We will recess this meeting.
Fantastic. Thanks, everybody.
The traffic is horrible outside.
Apparently, I need to come over and tour your closets, Janet.
What?
You responded to my email, and I'm like, apparently, I need to come over and tour your closets.
Oh, yeah.
You took the junk out of the attic.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that.
I
keep on eyeing Eldon's office there. It has a window, even.
If we had a real need for it, be in there or not. Well, the cleaning people need something.
Yeah.
Or another topic, but oh, up to the garage. What time is it? Carberry's showing up.
It's exactly the right time.
He's early.
It's about time to start.
He's early. What's going on?
He used to show up occasionally.
Every now and then. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good.
And this is an or, not yeah. and.
I don't see anything on the school district website, so I don't think that's true.
Yes, do you? Yeah.
Am I supposed to be looking anything? Is there any reason for me to get in the packet?
I think there is a memo in the packet.
Okay.
But
yes.
You've seen it. I think
so. I've seen it before. Yep. And of course I have memorized every sentence.
I figured.
Okay, let's go back in session. This is the Wednesday, August 31st, 2016 meeting of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors. This is a work session and we are at, silence that phone. We are at
penalty.
Item 5 on our agenda, which is steps to address disproportionate minority contact in the criminal justice system, including staffing and consultants. Andy and I did not talk with each other about who's going to lead this off. Andy, you want to, or you want me to? Or
You can go ahead.
Okay.
The memo is from you. So.
As you probably all know, we... got a group together, I think it's probably been 2.5 years or so ago, to talk about the issue of disproportionate minority contact as it results to the adult correctional system. We've obviously got Latasha DeLoach doing juvenile disproportionate minority contact stuff, and they have seen some very, very good results over the past few years. After, you know, several years of relationship building and stuff like that to get it started. So we've been talking about could we kind of duplicate that effort but do it on an adult level. Andy's done tons of research with ISAC and Jessica Peckover's done, or with NACO rather, Jessica Peckover's done a whole bunch of research. There really aren't any real specific programs out there doing exactly what we want to do, which to some extent you'd be creating something from whole cloth, but there are people doing bits and pieces in different places. So we have been talking for a long time, but really not kind of just spinning our wheels, not really getting anywhere. It's fairly easy to identify all the different things we lack in terms of personnel and data and whatnot, but it was hard to come up with a solution for how to move forward. So finally, a group of people who had been central to most of these meetings for the past however long, 2.5 years or so, met a week ago and came up with a proposal to kind of get us off of square one. And you should have that in your packet. It's kind of a written proposal, and the primary piece of it, well, let me back up. I think we would continue to have a group probably very similar to the group that made this recommendation that would continue to meet on this issue, but there's really three recommendations that we made. One is that Iowa City has been working with St. Ambrose University to collect a bunch of data on this. They're already pretty far down this path. We want to continue that and build upon that. The other piece is where Janet comes in, because most of the charges that people would have would come through her office. We talked about the possibility of hiring somebody in Janet's office who would do spend part of their time on adult DMC, but then also do several other things that are sort of, in a lot of ways, projects of the board, things that have we've kind of come up with that have created some extra work for Janet's office, and she sees a way to kind of piece that all together into position. Do you want to talk about that, Janet?
Yes. It was kind of, at that meeting, it was discussed whether to hire somebody, and I think Latasha was the one who said, even if we contract the recommendation to go back, the recommendation from the committee that had been meeting was to hire a consultant to do research, look at statistics, figure out how to collect the statistics, and then respond to them, looking at adult DMC. Because adults, unlike juveniles, there is no requirement that certain statistics be kept. In juvenile, there are requirements that they keep certain statistics, so it's easier to gather those. There isn't in the adult area. So then at this meeting, Rod had said that the board was looking at maybe hiring somebody, and Latasha said, even if we contract with a consultant, you need to have somebody within the county who's going to work with them. You need to have a contact who's going to actually work on implementing it. In looking at kind of what's going to happen, I mean, in reality, the sheriff's office is the only law enforcement agency in the county. If we want to kind of impact adult DMC, we're going to be working with all the law enforcement agencies. I would think if we want to work at it from the police perspective, then we probably want to work at it from looking at my office as well as looking at maybe what the judiciary does. And so having that person who's the contact with whoever we contract with or consult with to look at the data and things like that, having them in my office would make the most sense, as well as having the contacts with law enforcement, the judiciary, and obviously my office, to figure out kind of if we're going to make changes, how to do it, come up with the policies, come up with the procedures for doing those kinds of things. There wasn't another office within the county that I could see or a department that really worked as well. Additionally, as I'm trying to get some of the work done and investigating complaints about the minimum wage ordinance, I could use some additional help there is one area. And depending on what happens, if there's a statewide change in the minimum wage, it may not be as voluminous, the work that we're doing in Johnson County. If there isn't a state change, I think as the wage goes up to over $10 an hour in January, we could see a lot more complaints. I kind of see that as kind of the threshold that's going to lead to more issues that we're going to have to deal with employers.
Plus, so, we'll come up with something else for your office to do.
I have no doubt that's the case, right?
Well, I think
right.
You'll also see more blatant violations. I mean, there was a guy quoted in the Des Moines Register who just said, "I'm not doing it."
Mm-hmm.
And his name was there and everything, a local restaurant owner. So, I mean, I think that as we get to that next step, you're going to see more.
This makes complete sense to me. I mean, and I remember several years ago, Rod and I had lunch with you and said, "How about another civil attorney?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about where are we going to put them.
At the time,
you were unwilling to have someone over here.
Mm-hmm.
But has that changed?
I think we need this position more, and trying to figure out where to put them will be the next issue. I think in the space needs meeting, we also talked about possibly looking at some additional space for my office or an alternative space for my office, mm-hmm. which maybe would solve that if we could actually do that.
Part of the problem is this person's going to have to go through all these charges, which mm-hmm. will be at the courthouse.
Right,
right.
So, but they also have to work with Jessica and Latasha and, you know.
Right, right. I talked to Jessica right after the meeting, and she had said she had been looking for somebody, if they were going to have another position for looking at the CIT work and, you know, hiring a project coordinator, she thought there was maybe another office in MHDS, and I have not talked to Jan Shaw about
there are.
That. But,
I mean,
it's not a great thing. Yeah, I don't like the idea of having somebody, but if I had an office there and then we could figure out some at least workspace within my office,
there's a short-term fix and there's a longer-term.
Right.
The short-term is, if you're willing,
mm-hmm.
This position gets hired, we create an office over there for them, they print to this office, I mean, they're part of this office supports them,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you were worried about secretary type, right. clerk type. This office supports them, and then the longer term plan is some other day.
Yeah.
I mean, which there needs to be a longer term plan. I don't get that. I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
But we clearly have plenty enough work for a new civil attorney. I mean,
right.
And this idea of repurposing jail alternatives, when we put it in the budget, we just knew we wanted to do more work in this area. We didn't define what it was. So repurposing this money for this purpose now makes total sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then in the future, if we need a second investigator or whatever, the direct service in jail alternatives, we re-put it in the budget. I mean, all that makes total sense to me, but and I'm happy to put it in and you create a job description and hire them next week, but it appears to me they have to be here temporarily. I don't know where else you're going to put them.
Yeah, I think that that is the big issue that I have.
Yeah.
It's like with hiring the grant positions for the victim witness coordinator, as I said, we're kind of repurposing what we've been using as kind of a waiting room. Initially, it was designed 28 years ago.
You're dating
as a walk-in,
yourself.
Yeah, I know. As a walk-in room for the interns to meet with somebody who had a complaint and stuff like that. It's been used more recently as just kind of a waiting area when we have people waiting to testify because it basically holds shelf and a couple of chairs. We have repurposed it to put in a desk and a chair, maybe two chairs, and it's going to be our full-time victim witness coordinator, the grant position there, office. We are using the volunteer victim witness coordinator desk as the part-time victim witness coordinator space. We are repurposing the computer and workspace we had for doing criminal history checks where we have to have a computer that is separate that the public can't see for doing criminal history checks. We're repurposing that area, which is basically a desk too for a part-time evidence clerk, evidence technician. So we are really, really, really short on space. So the other thing I could do while we're training and things like that is we have just basically kind of a wide hallway with a table kind of set up, which is where I would probably initially put the attorney as we're doing orientation as well as maybe having an office over here until we can find something a little bit more permanent. Keep looking, but I'd probably want them in the office at least initially, even if it's not a great space, just to kind of be able to meet with them regularly or figure out something like that. But after the first couple of weeks, we're definitely going to need some place where they actually can have a desk and a phone, and that space gets used by other people too. So it's we're just really cramped over there at the courthouse. So
one thing that we hadn't talked about, or, you know, I typed up these notes based upon our conversations, and I didn't write it, and I probably should have, is that I think we would also propose that this group that has been meeting would continue to meet, I don't know how often, but quarterly or something, to review the
findings
with this person to talk about how do we in fact coordinate with St. Ambrose, you know, just to find out, to make sure that he or she is getting the cooperation that they need from various organizations and whatnot. So it's not like that group would drop off the face of the earth. We would just have somebody to do the work that frankly none of us has had the time to do. So
and yeah, I'm totally for that. And with the funding that's two carryovers and the jail alternatives amount of money, we have enough money to pay the attorney for the remainder of the fiscal year, plus some money on whatever it training or whatever, you know, investigation or a contract or something if we chose to.
Yeah, some of that could, especially if we start this funding now.
Well,
some of it could go towards St. Ambrose if the person he or she felt ready.
Right.
Yeah.
In 6 months.
I mean, even if we say yes,
$30,000 in the budget for that purpose.
That's right.
Twice. Yeah. Wasn't necessarily specifically St. Ambrose, but it was to do the study. I think it should be used for that.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, we talked about giving Jessica the person, which she needs some help. But if they want to convert that to Janet's position, which is going to be in essence doing a lot of the same work, I don't have a problem with that either.
So it all kind of started from Steve Dolezal, who said, I know you wanted us to hire another person, but we don't have any work for them. What we have is higher level work. We don't have the day-to-day, we don't have work for them because the inmate population is so far down. And so I'm like, repurposing the money to this makes total sense to me. And at some day, if we need that other position back, we just budget it again. And I know that you've talked to us before about the janitor's closet. And I think the board needs to come visit and make a decision about this. Mm-hmm. What's the most important here? A janitor's closet? Can that move to the garage? I mean, I don't know the answer to any of this, but...
I would think all that stuff could be kept in the garage and brought over at night.
Right.
If it had to be.
Yeah. So I think we need to come over and decide that, but I don't want to hold this up to do that. But even if we say yes today, you're not going to get this hired for 6 or 8 weeks.
Right. Right. So I need to redo a job description. The other thing, too, is as I look at this position and think about it, I probably don't want to hire an entry-level position. So I probably want to hire at least an assistant county attorney, too, is what my thinking is. Now, fortunately, I put in my budget last year to this fall. I was going to promote one of my assistant county attorney ones to an assistant county attorney, too. And by golly, she left me to go become a county attorney somewhere else. I mean, that's how good she was. So she certainly deserved the raise. But because of that, I actually have in my budget for this year enough to increase this from an assistant county attorney one to assistant county attorney two. So I could put that money towards it to make it a higher level, which mm-hmm. I think is really the kind of responsibility I kind of envision this person having. I don't want to give it to a brand new attorney.
Experience.
It could be.
I may have somebody on staff.
You could
have
a person internally who really cares about these things that wants to do it.
And I'd rather have that option than try to hire somebody brand new who would, you know, would qualify brand new out of law school and not really have the experience.
It would still, though, even if you do an internal transfer, it's going to, he or she is going to have to maintain a lot of work until you get somebody hired to replace him or her. Yeah. So. Yeah,
and I totally get that because you don't actually have time to worry about this. So whoever you're going to hire, you have to have the confidence that you can just turn it over. Mm-hmm. They're creating a brand new thing.
Right.
And if you have to micromanage that, there's not enough of you to go around. Mm-hmm. So making this a higher level position, because that's our expectations of it. I mean, we want a lot out of this person.
Right.
I mean... This isn't fresh out of school type work. Plus, they have to have the swagger to work with the chiefs to get them to comply with the data willingly that we would like to have. I mean, they have to have that level of respect. And I mean, that makes perfect sense to me.
I also think that you know, we've gone through this courthouse issue before. I think we need to do that again, but in the interim, I think it's budget time. I really think it's time that we take a look at taking people out of closets there and get some space adjacent to the courthouse for these people to work out of and get so it just works more fundamentally easy and better. And I think there's people that can work as long as they're within walking distance of that courthouse readily that can work separate from the courthouse itself, and I think it opened up the space in it as needed.
Too bad they tore down that building that was catty corner that where they used to have.
Well, there's plenty of open space right around there right now. Mm-hmm.
The music building moving out into their new facility opened up some space in your area, didn't it?
And we're going to be looking at that, but that's not on the agenda.
I know.
So just a statement.
So
yes.
I would just say that.
We get it.
As long as you're willing to temporarily allow them to be housed over here somewhere, mm-hmm. we should move forward with everything you guys have laid out, County Attorney 2. And then in October, you ought to, like, bring us over to look at every nook and cranny and every other building in that area mm-hmm. you want us to look at. And before we get to budget, that we can maybe create not the ideal plan, but some plan that makes sense.
And if we can get a person going in October, depending on how quickly he or she can hit the ground running and how many of these other things come up, hopefully by January or something, that person would have had some contact with St. Ambrose, and mm-hmm. we might have a better idea if we would be spending any money in the second half of the year. It's possible we just carry it forward another year because they're not quite ready to
rebudget
and
all
do it.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. that's a good problem to have. So, mm-hmm.
and meanwhile, they could also be getting up to speed on minimum wage and right. helping with.
There's plenty of work.
There's not a dearth of work.
Right.
For sure. And unfortunately, this Board of Supervisors are agitators, so you know that's not the end of it.
Really? I noticed that.
That's a good problem to have.
We always ask permission before we ask you if you'll do something.
And then there was one final thing, which really we haven't done anything about yet, but several people brought up the fact that the UI Public Policy Center has seems to have a real interest in this kind of issue. We really have not engaged them at all. And so I know Pete, I'm going to contact him, just see if they have any resources to bear. They might have somebody in, you know, law school or journalism or social work or some department that wants to do some kind of study. He tends to get those kind of cross departmental
interdisciplinary
studies projects going, and so maybe there's somebody out there that wants to look at something, and if so, I think we'd want to work with them, but we just don't know that yet. So that's the final recommendation. Otherwise, it's...
And I think Latasha's worked with them some. She's the one who kind of mentioned it several times, so
yeah,
knows firsthand that they have an interest in it. So...
Well, I think if folks are comfortable with this, then we'd just ask Janet to do a job description and go. So
get her done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's agreement. So, yeah, thank you for your willingness to do this.
It doesn't appear we had to twist your arm very hard this time.
Right.
I think, too, it will be, it's not news to anybody up here, but there have been a number of people asking us to be proactive on this issue for, you know, at least a decade.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a really positive step to be able to show folks that we're listening. So.
Well, to that degree, we're not just hiring a consultant. Mm-hmm. An elected official is going to make it assistant county attorney too. That shows you the level of
commitment
we have. I mean, you could just hire a consultant, call it good, and they have no power and no authority and no, you know, long-term game plan here, but to make it a position and not an entry-level position is a huge kind of statement about.
Show some serious commitment.
Yeah. And having somebody in my office, if we want to implement certain things, I mean, like we're about to start a new driving while barred diversion program because we found that was an area where there's disproportionality. If I have another
body. What
kind
of diversion?
For driving while barred.
Oh, okay.
Which is.
Right.
It's a traffic offense that often comes from not paying tickets initially and anyhow it escalates. So
it's in addition
to my driving under suspension diversion program, this is kind of for the higher level of what comes if you don't pay those lower level. Anyhow, but it's like if I had some additional help to even help implement some of these things that we're coming up with too, it would be very helpful. So
yeah, a lot of those also are not just not paying fines. A lot of it's, you know, offenses happening again, the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. Speeding and drunk driving and things like that.
They probably won't get diverted if they're bad drivers, but if it's because of non-payment, that's the other.
Right. There's been some news about that recently that it actually turns into debtor's prison because they can't pay the fine from one initial stop, couldn't afford the fine, and just escalates, and they end up spending 6 months in jail because they couldn't pay a fine.
An accident without insurance?
No. It could be a speeding ticket.
We don't have as much of this slide, but if you start to read about what was going on in like Ferguson, Missouri,
yes,
a lot of that is the cumulative effect of people that just can't pay all these fines.
Yes.
So. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back to you then. And I've started to draft some of the job descriptions, so I'll work on that.
And so, Janet, when we get to the point of that you're actually ready to hire, because this is something that the public has been on us about, we should do a nice press release when you actually get the person so that folks know. Yeah.
So we'll just, the job description will be new. It's not just a normal county attorney too.
Right.
So we'll have to actually vote on it to add it to the.
Okay. So I'll start working on it and work with Laura too.
Okay.
So, and I'm going to include you know, a lot of the things that my civil attorneys do now, probably even some of the stuff that the criminal attorneys do, is just down farther on in the job description, mm-hmm. so that we can have them do whatever, you know, so it's kind of like while the data is being collected, I'm not going to let them sit around. Trust me on that. There's no sitting around in our office. So.
One more thing. Have you gotten feedback from, say, Iowa City, Coralville, North Liberty, their law enforcement about this?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, but I even brought it up at our chief's meeting earlier yes. this week, and all of them are willing to do the data collection if we can figure out how to do it. It's a matter of figuring out exactly what has to be collected, and that's when we need somebody who actually analyzes data. When we looked at doing this, like, it must have been, was it 3 years ago? I was looking at trying to do it through our committee, our disproportionate minority contact committee that we had, trying to collect the data just for possession of marijuana charges, because I thought those all go through my office. We can look at those. And when I started to try to figure out how many different data points we would have to collect on, the data analysis was going to be way outside yeah. of my statistical yeah. abilities. And I realized we have to get somebody who's going to figure out how to do that. And if you want to go back to the step with law enforcement, you really have to get somebody who knows how to do it, who can program it into their track system. I think that I've talked to people, and there's ways of doing it. It costs money to hire the programmers yeah. and stuff. To do
and it may be that one of the recommendations that comes out of this is all law enforcement needs to use a slightly different software. Mm-hmm. You know, there could be something like that. We don't know that yet, but it could
yeah. Part of the problem was, and maybe it's changed, is you can't ask them what ethnicity they are or may not, and you can't put in just because they may look like they're Chinese or Japanese or black or Hispanic. You know, you can't do that. So I don't know how you get an accurate number.
Well, I think that's why we hire like somebody like St. Ambrose, who's been dealing with this. Yeah. We don't start from scratch, and because there are all those questions, and we don't have that expertise. So you have to ask somebody who actually knows how to collect the data, how to make that determination, and that's why we need somebody to work with.
Mike, to just to further answer your question, Jory Bailey from the Iowa City Police Department has been on this committee. Kingsley Botchway actually chaired it for about 3 years, two
right.
years.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry Bedford came a couple times. I think it was something that he decided he couldn't necessarily come to, but he was favorably disposed.
Right.
We didn't have anybody from North Liberty, but most of the bigger law enforcement agencies.
I'm sure the university police is going to have to be involved as well.
And yeah.
And I think all of them are going to be fine. I think it's just a matter of we have to just make sure that there's a way of collecting the data
yeah.
and there's not going to be a problem in terms of getting them to agree to do it if there's a way to enter it and calculate. I think they are all now using, I think most of the agencies at least are using what's called tracks. Maybe you know this better than me. And so I think we may have to pay programmers to change how things are entered.
Get
what
we want out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
But law enforcement's willing to try to work with it. So
it's related. Who's Jan's liaisons and Lynette's liaisons?
We're Jan's, and now we're Lynette's.
Yeah. So since you overlap with both of them, are you willing to talk to them about space and rearranging? Because we already were going to rearrange. Now we doubly need to rearrange. And we need to know how many offices we're talking about.
And we need to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it needs to happen this fall.
Yeah.
I mean, this new attorney makes sense that they're near Jessica and,
Emily.
Mm-hmm. And so, I didn't mean to assign you work, but.
No, that's okay. I have
Okay, anything else for any of this? Thank you, Janet, for
Thank you.
Helping solve this problem. And yeah. now if we just had a place to put them, it'd yeah. be great.
Yeah, just a new courthouse would be nice. But.
And why don't
we've tried that. Yeah.
Why don't we come over in October?
That would be great.
So let's come on a site visit.
Pre budget, too,
yeah.
would
pre-budget.
Be very nice to talk
yeah.
about that kind
right.
of stuff. So
right.
yeah,
okay.
I'll talk to you.
Good.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Internal processes.
The only thing that I was going to touch on is that next Tuesday. You know, we've set a strategic planning meeting in the afternoon, and so I'm going to send you a little homework, and it won't be hard, but the goal of the first meeting is to identify the things that are in process, not anything new, but the things that are already kind of in process that you want to identify that, you know, we want to keep going, or we want to assume that they're continuing to go. That may be some things under diversity, for instance, or sustainability. Mm-hmm. And so I'd just like to brainstorm that list, who we were checking in with about it, and sort of like not real detailed goals, but what do we want to, what are you expecting is going to kind of be the result in 2017? So I'll send you an email, and if you just kind of brainstorm that list, the more I have before the meeting, the more we can just kind of jump right into it.
I don't have a lot of time to breathe right now.
Right.
And so with Monday and as a holiday, so I'm not guaranteeing I'm going to get to anything before Tuesday.
That's fine.
It's just busy. Lots of evaluations. And
yeah.
I mean, sure. I can try, but I'm not promising.
No, and I'm, like I said, it's just the more we've got kind of in
place, the more you can get, the better. And
yeah, the quicker we'll jump into it. So I think that's all I had.
Shove to her armpits and alligators.
Anybody else? Anything for?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm slightly concerned about this agenda this afternoon. And in the email we got last night from the Board of Health. We're going on a site visit at 2:30, and then we're having this joint meeting at 4, and I'm not really prepared to be there for hours talking about job descriptions and a job evaluation, appeals outside of normal county functions. I feel like so I'm curious how we want to handle this. Is six pretty, it seems like to me, large topics, and I mean, we're going to set some sort of time limit, or I'm happy to listen to what they have to say, but I read their emails, so I don't need to talk about it for an hour. So I don't know if I'm the only one that's sensing that I'm being brought into the lion's den, but that's what I feel like.
I feel like I'm anticipating that much of what will be discussed are those appeals. And, I mean, I have a real blunt answer for them, but I don't know.
We can assign you to that.
I'd be more than happy to.
I think we need to explain to them why we put it on the back burner and what we're doing with JET and what we think they're doing.
Yeah, but see, in that meeting I went to with JET, I mean, the criteria for appeals are plain, and they're in black and white, and they chose to table it rather than say, these don't make it based on these criteria. And so it was tabled instead. And I think that now is the time to say, bam, this one doesn't work because of A, this one doesn't work because of B, and this one doesn't work because of C, and throw them out. Until which time the evaluation process is completely revamped, I think you need to stick to what's in place. And it's I'll be your spokesperson.
I guess all I'm getting at is I'm not real interested in staying until 6 or 7 and having them twist my arm that whole time. The email from the Board of Health last night made me actually not want to come this afternoon. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to sit there for an hour and listen to every job and have my arm twisted. It's just, I'm not going to do it.
Andy, do they have a meeting scheduled immediately following this meeting?
They don't. But Doug's email, when he sent the list of items, he said it looks long, but we're still aiming to get through within an hour, depending on questions, et cetera. So,
Well, then that answers part of my concerns,
because I have a 5:30 appointment that I want to make. So,
okay.
They do know that there are some scheduling issues. So.
We'll assume then that it's intended to be an hour meeting and that none of these will take too long. So, anything else, anybody? Okay. Don't see anything else. Where are we meeting over there to call to order the...
So you're actually meeting... now that I look at the agenda, I think it's wrong. it says the lobby of public health on the third floor. I think it's supposed to be second floor.
Okay.
So I guess the other question I had, I thought there was two meetings. I thought we had one at 2:30 and one at 4.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You have a site visit.
One's at site visit.
Yeah.
Right.
The other one's a joint meeting.
So that's in the lobby.
The joint meeting is
in 203. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go along on the site visit, and I'll have the room set up for the joint meeting.
Okay.
So we're 2:30.
All right. Sounds like a good idea. We got anybody from the public? Seeing no one, we're adjourned.
Andy, I tried to print that thing again, and it...